important, certainly in the post-war period. I don't know whether you've noticed this. You probably don't read the relevant newspapers, but almost all of the people who used to bleat meaninglessly about experts and academics pointing out the increasingly fascistic behaviour of Donald Trump are now bleating aimlessly about Lisa Nandy refusing to dissent from an interviewer asking her whether she felt Nigel Farage was showing fascistic leanings. It's almost as if these clowns learn absolutely nothing from the evidence in front of them. Because here we are, looking at Donald Trump and looking at behaviour that is historically what you would expect from a sworn enemy.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister appears to have ruled out retaliatory tariffs against the US as tensions continue over the future of Greenland.
Such measures hurt British workers, British businesses, and the British economy. And that is why I've been so clear on this issue. A trade war is in no one's interest.
Sir Keir Starmer has been speaking at Downing Street in the last half hour. It's after President Trump threatened tariffs on eight European allies if they continue to oppose his efforts to take over Greenland. Sir Keir has reiterated that dialogue will be kept open, but the future of Greenland belongs to its people.
There is a principle here that cannot be set aside because it goes to the heart of how stable and trusted international cooperation works. And so any decision about the future status of Greenland belongs to the people of Greenland and the Kingdom of Denmark alone. That right is fundamental and we support it.
Stay with LBC for the latest throughout today. In other news this morning, two high-speed trains have crashed in southern Spain, killing at least 39 people. Dozens more were injured in the collision in Andalusia last night. Rescue efforts are continuing. We voiced the account of witness Bianca Berlanu, who was on board one of the trains.
We felt the first jolt, and in a fraction of a second, another very strong one. The table in front of our seat fell on top of us, the lights went out, and the carriage roof collapsed.
Reform UK has seen its second defection from a sitting Conservative MP in a week. Andrew Rosendale, the member for Rumford, was a shadow foreign office minister in Kemi Badenoch's team. The government has pulled its amendment to the proposed Hillsborough law, which aims to prevent public cover-ups. The bill's been heavily criticised over concerns that security services could be exempt from disclosing information. Ministers say they'll work to strengthen the bill without compromising national security. And legal action by Prince Harry and several other high-profile figures against the Daily Mail's publisher is set to start at the High Court. Associated Newspapers denies claims of unlawful information gathering. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 59 at 10,159. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many today. Drier for central and southeastern areas with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Subway knows you love a good deal. So say hello to Sub Yay. Weekly deals that will make you go, yay. That money off your fave subs and spuds, getting bonus points on your order, or free upgrades for a meal deal. That's Sub Yay. Get all the best offers exclusively for Subway Rewards members. See the Subway app for specific offer availability and T's and C's.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after ten is the time. A very good morning to you. And, well, here we are. It's hard to track, isn't it, whether or not we are hitting brick walls or just passing through ever more milestones in the assembly of increasingly incontrovertible evidence that the United States of America is led by a lunatic. I wonder whether it's time even to drop the F word. Fascistic doesn't seem to come close to some of the conduct that's been on display now. Donald Trump is a lunatic. Some of the problems we have in properly tracking these moments, of course, is knowing what's real and what isn't real. I've seen a letter, and it's been posted on a reputable site that appears to show Donald Trump complaining to the Prime Minister of Norway that because they didn't give him the Nobel Peace Prize, he's doubly committed to the notion of stealing Greenland. Presumably thinking that one Scandinavian country is very much the same as the other. We'll look into that a little later in the programme. But the point, of course, is that never has it been more important to rely upon trusted sources. And how can you, when so many of those sources in this country have been in abject and fairly pathetic denial about the obvious threat that Donald Trump poses, both to the world order and to the safety and security, whether economic or actual, of former NATO allies, most obviously, of course, in the Baltic states and Scandinavia. I thought it might be helpful to run through moments upon which, it's not an exhaustive list, but notable occasions when a UK Prime Minister has formally addressed the nation. It's not quite as rare as you might have thought. You might have thought, well, what is it? Wars and pandemics, with a little bit of Brexit, probably, the morning after. But it's a little bit more than that, but not quite as much as you might hope on a morning like this if you are thinking of investing in the odds on this not being a moment of massive importance. So if we were to go back to 1939, 3rd of September, no prizes for remembering or indeed simply knowing that that is the moment at which Winston Churchill chose to announce that Britain was at war with Germany following the invasion of Poland. Just under a year later, he gave the blood, toil, tears and sweat speech. It wasn't Churchill that announced Britain was at war with Germany, of course. He didn't become Prime Minister until May of the following year, at which point he gave the blood, toil, tears and sweat speech. And then on the 8th of May 1945, he announced Germany's surrender, still commemorated, of course, as VE Day. Then you have Clement Attlee, shortly after becoming Prime Minister that year, announcing Japan's surrender. Then you have 15 years pause before Harold Macmillan gave the Winds of Change speech, which was addressing decolonisation. So that probably was the last big speech about empire, the end of empire. So the beginning and the end of wars and the end of empire so far, if we were to track from 1939 to 1960, those are the moments that merited the sort of address that the Prime Minister has just delivered. The beginning and the end of wars, or the war, and the end of empire. Margaret Thatcher chose a television address to discuss hunger strikes in Northern Ireland. Similarly, a year later, the outbreak of the Falklands War. And I think, forgivably, she decided to do a sort of lap of honour on the telly in June of 87 after winning a historic third term. And then we move to the late 20th century with John Major announcing the UK's exit from the exchange rate mechanism, so-called Black Wednesday. Tony Blair gave an address following the September the 11th attacks on the United States. Also, I think, the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, and the announcement of UK military action in Iraq. Then you've got Gordon Brown outlining ways in which to stop the banks from tanking during the global financial crisis in 2008. David Cameron announcing the coalition government, something sufficiently unprecedented to merit such a moment. And then later, 6 years later, announcing his own resignation following that Brexit referendum. Then you've got the Manchester Arena terror attack, the Salisbury nerve agent attack, the first national COVID lockdown in March of 2020. The previous two were Theresa May. And then another COVID one in May, outlining the first steps to ease lockdown restrictions. And now this, which sits, I think, closer to moments of peril than it does moments of country management. Some of those examples would fit into both categories, wouldn't they? And you heard much of that speech. If you didn't, we'll be sharing some clips shortly. But Keir Starmer charged effect. Well, in fact, have a little listen to a small piece of it now.
Mature alliances are not about pretending differences don't exist. They are about addressing them directly, respectfully, and with a focus on results. On Greenland, the right way to approach an issue of this seriousness is through calm discussion between allies. And let's be clear, the security of Greenland matters, and it will matter more as climate change reshapes the Arctic, as sea routes open and strategic competition intensifies. The High North will require greater attention, greater investment and stronger collective defence. The United States will be central to that effort, and the UK stands ready to contribute fully alongside our allies through NATO.
What's your first thought on hearing that? And probably it will be based upon what you heard earliest rather than latest. But I found myself reflecting upon the possibility of having a mature alliance with a demonstrably immature partner. Can you have a mature alliance with a toddler? Can you have a mature alliance with a four-year-old having a tantrum? Can you have a mature alliance with somebody so utterly detached from normality that the very concept of maturity seems, well, moot at the very least? I don't know. I mean, it's a question you might choose to answer. I bow to few people in my admiration for Hugh Grant. And of course he will be in mind later as Prince Harry turns his attentions to the Daily Mail in that High Court, a case that anybody who wonders how this cavalcade of catastrophe has been visited upon our country over the last 10 years, would do well to follow. The Daily Mail, probably unique in the malign and hideous influence it's had over public discourse and politics in this country, let alone the personal lives and privacy, allegedly, of the plaintiffs in this case. But the legacy Hugh Grant has given the country, for which I do not thank him, is the closing bars of Love Actually, when he provides an entirely unrealistic account of what a UK Prime Minister might reasonably do in the face of, a monster in the White House. I don't know that we should thank Hugh Grant for that, because you'd be surprised how many messages I get, genuinely, apparently, seriously, suggesting that Keir Starmer should take a leaf out of that character's book when he is dealing with Donald Trump. Although, of course, Mark Carney arguably has managed to be a lot more robust. This is an opinion, not a fact. And my opinion is that Keir Starmer couldn't have done much more in that moment than what he did. You can't do your brinksmanship in a press conference. Neither can you really, even if the other side is, engage in a sort of public exercises of leverage. He had little choice but to essentially, he tried to ride two horses, didn't he? We will resist this. NATO, or the rest of NATO, Europe, call it what you will resist this ludicrous attempted land grab by Donald Trump. But we hope it doesn't come to that, which would explain why he hasn't come out with all guns blazing. That is, it's nowhere near the end of Love Actually, is my first correction of the day. There you go. You probably got me on that one. I don't know, is the short answer to whether or not it will be proved to be the right thing to do. In the same way, I still don't know whether rolling out the red carpet for Donald Trump at that ludicrous state visit at Windsor Castle, where they just essentially let him ride around the garden. He was allowed to ride around the King's Garden in various golden carriages and was sent home looking as pleased as punch, even more pleased than he was when he was given the FIFA Peace Prize. I don't know whether that was at that moment, in that context, the right thing to do, but all the buttering up in the world, it seemed to many of us at the time, would probably come to naught. But you bet the house on the probably, don't you? You bet the house on the probably. It would probably come to naught, but that, of course, means it might not. And he's still doing that today. He's still doing the mature alliance. He's still doing the respectful partnership. He's still doing the good grief, I hope it doesn't come to pass, that we need to turn the dial up to the next notch. We've come a very, very long way from when Mark Rutte called Donald Trump daddy, haven't we, in the hope of keeping him sweet. You can't keep somebody sweet if they are a sociopath or a fascist or whatever a curious condition it is that Donald Trump suffers from. It might be helpful for you to think of Henry VIII at this point, and the way in which you would go from being the most trusted ally, the key consigliere in a Henry VIII administration, to being beheaded the following week. We often focus on the wives. We often focus upon how you could go in the blink of an eye from being the beloved apple of his eye and the subject of the song Greensleeves to being beheaded in the blink of an eye. Such were his whims. Such was his psychopathy. But also it was the key advisers. It was the Thomas Mores, the Thomas Cromwells. They would go from being absolutely numero uno in his favour to being dead by tea time the next day. So you can't keep these people sweet permanently. When absolute power is being exercised by absolute monsters, you cannot keep them sweet. And here's the jeopardy. You probably still have to try. What else can you do? So Donald Trump is threatening a trade war, chiefly against the countries and NATO allies that have been most vocal in their opposition to his plan to steal Greenland, against the express wishes of the population of Greenland. And what else can you do? Not just Starmer, but the, if you like, the normal world. What else can you do? Butchering these people up, trying to keep them sweet, is never, ever a guarantee of being excused from their caprice or their cruelty. But if they possess almost all the power, what else can you do? Should we do that as a phone-in first? 03456060973 is the number that you need. I mean, look, 2020 hindsight is a wonderful thing. But saying that he never should have been invited to Windsor Castle, I don't think that's helpful. I don't even think that it's correct. But what I do think would be helpful today is examining what the UK Prime Minister's options are. And if you want to throw that net a little further, and we're blessed now with a listenership that can be fairly described as international, would countries, or would the leaders of countries that are still in the European Union, have more cards in their hand at the moment? Would they have more weapons in their arsenal? I suspect they probably would. Danish, German, Swedish, Norwegian, French, Dutch and Finnish troops have already arrived in Greenland. There is a single UK military officer there as part of the multinational reconnaissance force. Starmer continues to try to, and I hate the way the word appease has become an unalloyed negative in the context, probably for British history, of Neville Chamberlain. We all appease. We appease every day. You appease in your personal relationships. You appease in your professional relationships. You could call it compromise. Very, very few of us end up getting 100% of what we wanted when we go into a negotiation. That's why Brexit was such a disaster, because everybody in favour of it thought that they would be able to do that. Remember? You remember that rhetoric. But we all appease. We all reach compromises. We all reach agreements. We all recognise ultimately that you mustn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So he continues to try to appease Trump while working with European allies to preserve the rules-based international order. For the avoidance of doubt, you cannot stay on both of those horses indefinitely. So I'm not coming after people saying that Starmer should have been stronger, he should have been more Hugh Grant, he should have been less appeasing. I'm not coming after you with all guns blazing today, because you can't stay on both of these horses indefinitely. You cannot stand in lockstep with our European allies and in defence of the international order, the rules-based international order. You cannot do that and appease Trump indefinitely if he stays upon the course of annexation of Greenland. So what else could Keir Starmer have done this morning? 03456060973. I don't know how helpful it is to ask in quite two-dimensional terms, what did you make of the speech? Because in many ways, people whose opinions are built upon prejudices and ignorance can often rise to the surface in conversations like that. But what he could have done differently is a lot easier to examine. What could he have done differently? I put it to you cautiously at 18 minutes past 10 this morning. Nothing. That's question one. And of course, contingent upon that observation is that he actually did a very good job in incredibly difficult circumstances. Again, that's an opinion. Question number two, have a crack, if you think you can, at the significance, detailing and describing the significance of this moment. I I don't know if you were listening last week. We had one of those moments where an idea occurred to me on the staircase towards the studio. I was desperately trying to decide which subject we should talk about first at 10 o'clock in the morning. Should we talk about the apparent abandonment of Ukrainian interests upon the altar of more pressing and urgent issues? Should we talk about the situation on the streets in Tehran and Iran? Or should we talk about the designs that Donald Trump clearly had upon Greenland? And I did that thing that I sometimes do when I can't make my mind up. I had all three puddings. We had a conversation about which of those three issues was the most urgent and pressing from the perspective of UK interests or geopolitics. And it was almost unanimous. The consensus was Greenland. I really urge you to listen back to that program on the LBC app, because I found it absolutely fascinating and deeply illuminating. And here we are. Everybody who argued last week that Greenland was the one we had to watch most closely has been proved categorically correct. As with all the things that we've been right about over the last 10 years, there's absolutely no pleasure or consolation in being proved categorically correct, up to and including all the idiots who used to use Trump derangement syndrome as a pejorative. But today is not about I told you so. Today is about what happens next. How important is this moment? Explain to a sceptic why it absolutely merits a prime ministerial address to the nation. And yeah, I think it probably is time to do this one as well. If Trump will not be swayed, what do we do next? 0345 60 60 973. And how sad is it that I have to qualify what we mean by we? It would once have been fairly clear. It would be the European Union. But we ain't in that anymore. It can't be NATO, because the United States is in that. So I suppose loosely we discuss either the United Kingdom as an individual entity, or we discuss the rest of NATO, the bit of NATO, or the big bits of NATO that are left when the United States absents itself. 0345 60 60 973. What could he have done differently? Just how important is this moment? And if Trump doesn't change his plans, what on earth do we do next? 0345 60 60 973.
LBC.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Book a jet to holiday by midnight Monday and save £250 per couple with the code Beat the Blues. Get that just booked feeling with just a £60 deposit per person. Book now and go direct from London Gatwick. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Offer available until 19th of Jan. T's and C's apply.
You're hopping from call to call. Cameras on, pretending you're fine. But underneath, you're irritable and craving a smoke. Don't let nicotine cravings ruin your focus. Nicorette's lozenges help fight smoking and vaping cravings and can be used anytime, anywhere. Make 2026 the year you quit and enjoy freedom from smoking and vaping with help from Nicorette. Quitting made real. Nicorette Cause Lozenge contains nicotine. Stop smoking or stop nicotine vaping aid. Requires willpower. Always read the label.
At Kia, we have an award-winning range of electric cars for you to discover. From the compact SUV, the Kia EV3, and our latest hatchback, the Kia EV4, to our stylish new Kia EV5, the all-electric family SUV. Discover what driving electric really means. And if you order any Kia electric car by March 31st, you'll enjoy your first two services free. Search Discover Your Kia EV to book your test drive today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
T's and C's apply.
Go on. Leave the never-ending laundry pile. Quiet flat. And empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues. With our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 60 60 973.
23 minutes after 10. Just pour encourager les autres. I'm going to put Graham in Idiot's Corner for early doors this morning. You probably weren't expecting to be opening up Idiot's Corner quite so early, but please don't anybody else bother sending me this argument. Okay, Graham has written, it looks like you have fallen for Trump's trick of stopping everyone talking about the Epstein files by his actions over Venezuela and Greenland, IMHO. Yeah, well done. Well done, Captain. That's absolutely right. A prime minister, or rather a president of a sovereign country, gets kidnapped. The president of the United States of America sets his sights upon European territory, and you don't think we should talk about it because there are more things in town. That is an expression of almost unbelievable idiocy, which is why Idiot's Corner is open early for you today. And don't anybody else waste tenpence sending me that message or indeed sharing that sentiment. The idea that you can't hold two thoughts in your head at the same time is heartbreaking. David is in Seattle. David, you can kick things off. What would you like to say?
I want to apologize from Seattle for the trauma that we're inflicting upon the world from the U.S., my friends and I are trying to figure out how we're going to survive the next 3 years, and we're not sure what the path is. With regard to what Keir Starmer should have said or done, I don't think you can have a mature alliance with someone who has no friends and who doesn't believe in the rule of law. At the same time, you have to find a way to survive the next 10 months until the midterm elections, and pray that he loses a lot of power after America sees right. And if we don't see right, and if we don't vote the Republicans out of office, then you need to start thinking about a post-America world.
I've got a couple of issues, and I know you'll be aware of them, David. The first is, I would no longer describe the midterms as a definite event, and Trump himself has made the first noises about the possibility of such a state of emergency or the Insurrection Act or whatever nonsense he comes up with to justify this. He even said, didn't he, last week out loud, I've done such a brilliant job, maybe we don't even need to have elections. So that's problem number one with your thesis. Problem number two, I think, is that he's also demonstrated that he doesn't need or he won't wait for congressional approval for doing things that historically and legally and constitutionally demand congressional approval. So three case scenarios. Number one, you're right. Number two, you're wrong. You're wrong because the midterms don't happen. And number three, you're wrong because the midterms happen. He takes a kicking but carries on regardless.
If he loses power in the midterms, there's a lot that a Democratic House and Senate could do to get in his way. I think that'll end all his judge appointments, and he won't be able to put them through.
Yeah.
That will.
But isn't this potentially? I mean, we use the word fascist quite early on this program because we've read a history book. But that is the point at which fascism and democracy clash and only one prevails. So we're still clinging to the idea that democracy can resist the fingers of fascism gripping the throat of a population, and history's taught us that it can't always or ever.
Well, the question is whether the military would stay in line with him as he exceeds his authority and exceeds common decency
and that doesn't sound apocalyptic anymore.
We won't know that until it happens.
Well, thank God the Secretary of State for Defense is a man absolutely replete with integrity, decency, and intelligence. Eh? Otherwise, we might have a real problem. That's a great analysis, David, and thank you for giving me that sort of three-pronged possibility. I don't think we'll dwell forever in Idiot's Corner this morning, but just by way of a counterbalance to David's intelligence and knowledge, Andy's been in touch. He writes, I can't stand you, O'Brien, but if Starmer had any sense, he'd use this situation to develop a better relationship with Europe and get some better trading terms. They make it difficult for us to trade. Oh, a Brexiter. isn't it? They make it difficult for us to trade, but they are more than happy to take our weapons for Ukraine because the Ruskies are on their doorstep. That man's vote is worth the same as your vote, remember? Let's just click on history and get a little flavour of where he's coming from politically. Oh, here we go. Nice to see Farage starting to surround himself with people with experience in government rather than Starmer, who was completely unprepared for anything. So, again, Andy's vote is worth the same as yours. It's coming up to 10:30. I think I'll leave those two, Graham and Andy, to play canasta in Idiot's Corner, where we carry on canvassing opinions from people who are worth listening to. What could Starmer have done differently, and what on earth should he do if, stroke, when, Trump fails to respond to attempts to ameliorate the situation? Dominic Ellis is here now with your headlines.
The Prime Minister has called for calm discussion between allies as tensions grow over Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer's made an emergency speech at Downing Street this morning. President Trump has threatened tariffs on 8 European allies if they continue to oppose his efforts to take over the territory. Sir Keir has stressed that the issue can be resolved through dialogue, but insisted that the future of Greenland remains with its people. Do stay with LBC for the latest throughout today. In other news this morning, two high-speed trains have crashed in southern Spain, killing at least 39 people. Dozens more were injured in the collision overnight. And Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court for the start of his case against the publishers of the Daily Mail. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information, which it denies. LBC weather cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many, drier for central and southeastern areas, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stop Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar, Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right, Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood, and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at notcatch.com.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Sounds like Arjun is going to wake up feeling fresh. And it's a good job. Because he's got a big presentation to nail just down the road. Get better sleep for your money. Book your next work stay at Premier Inn.
The Virgin Atlantic holiday sale is now on. This is your sign. To dive into the crystal water of an ancient cave pool in Mexico. Or dry off in the sun on a white sand beach in the Maldives. Or pour yourself into the culture and chaos of a night market in Thailand. Seize the sale. Book in store and online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected travel dates apply. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com/terms.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:33 is the time. This is now being reported by Bloomberg. I said to you at the top of the show today that I don't know anymore. If something pops up on my social media feed, I used to be able to trust Twitter because if somebody had a blue tick, they were reliable. And now, of course, on Twitter, if someone has a blue tick, they could well be a paedophile apologist. And Blue Sky is simply not big enough or broad enough to have provided a similar sort of background, a similar context, which is, of course, precisely why Elon Musk has done what he's done. But this is now being reported by Bloomberg. That letter that I suggested at the top of the show was probably real, but I couldn't be sure, sent to the Norwegian Prime Minister, Jonas Gahr Støre, in which Trump writes, "Considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus..." It's not really funny anymore, is it, when I point out that the word plus is inexplicably in capital letters. "I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States of America. The world is not secure unless we have complete and total control of Greenland." And, of course, it falls once again to the Prime Minister to explain to Donald Trump that the Norwegian government does not award the Nobel Peace Prize any more than the British government awards the Booker Prize. "Regarding the Nobel Peace Prize, I have several times clearly explained to Trump what is well known, namely that it is an independent Nobel committee and not the Norwegian government that awards the prize. But the letter is real. A letter from the President of the United States of America to the Prime Minister of Norway, displaying epic ignorance of all the relevant factors, but also explaining that because they didn't give him the Nobel Peace Prize, he is not going to be swayed from his determination to annex Greenland." If you're just joining us, Keir Starmer this morning attempted to ride two horses. At this point in proceedings, I don't believe he had much choice, or any choice. He has to try to de-escalate that dread word. He has to try to de-escalate the situation in the hope that what Trump is threatening to do will not happen. And bullies often do respond to threats more than they respond to appeasement, but that time hasn't yet arrived. What happens when it does arrive? What happens if attempts to keep the lines of communication open, the current reluctance or resistance to the idea of imposing retaliatory tariffs, or at least threatening to do so in the event of Trump going ahead with his threats? Can you have, in other words, mature alliances, which is the phrase Starmer favoured, with profoundly immature entities? I don't know. But I do like the two horses analogy, and at the moment he can ride both of them, but he cannot do so indefinitely. So what happens next? Edward is in The Hague. Edward, what would you like to say?
First, James, thank you for taking my call. There's been a quote going around in my head this morning, and the quote is, "The truth is what our contemporaries let us get away with." And I think whether you look at domestic or international politics, far too many of us for far too long have been engaging with Trump on his supposed arguments as opposed to doing what we need to do, which is reclaim the truth. So the example this morning with the Prime Minister is he started his statement by talking about global security in the global north, as if there's a flotilla of Chinese boats ready to make landfall in northern Greenland, which of course there patently isn't. This has nothing to do with security. This has everything to do with a man late in life who has a long legacy of greed, corruption, and ambition, who wants to recreate in the 21st century American dominance which existed in the 19th century. Whether you're talking about, for example, the creation of a budget for a national militia like ICE, whether you're talking about his arguments around dismantling international aid, whether you're talking about what he says about climate change, you can go right through the list of issue areas after issue area which he's dismantled. We engage with him at his level as opposed to telling him at a certain point, "I'm sorry, we're going to live in the real world.
When is that point?
A line in the sand right now."
When is that point?
I think that point occurs on a daily basis, and yes, every single day we miss the chance. I think that today Starmer had an opportunity to say something specific to Greenland, but I think over the past 10 years that point has come and gone on so many different issues. And we sometimes pretend like we're dealing with Trump for the past week. The Trump phenomenon has been upon us for the past 10 years.
Obviously I agree with every single syllable that you said intellectually, but I don't feel it in the same way that you do. Is that I still think he has to keep one foot on the other saddle, the saddle of potential de-escalation, the saddle of reasoning Trump into a retreat, as opposed to threatening him into a retreat, which is the next option, but you don't go to that until this one has failed. Does that sound Chamberlain-esque to you?
I wouldn't call it Chamberlain-esque. I agree with what you said earlier. I don't like the notion of compromise as being labelled appeasement.
No.
But I do think a concerted effort amongst the EU, amongst other NATO allies, amongst other leaders in the Commonwealth. You see Mark Carney doing a very good job of this recently in China, for example.
Yes.
But a concerted effort of everybody coming together and essentially saying, this far and no further.
How much does Brexit prevent Starmer from doing that, do you think? And obviously I'm a bit bent on Brexit in the idea of my conviction that it has been, well, it has been an unalloyed bad, but maybe it isn't quite as bad as I think it is, and this isn't the reason why Starmer feels the need to almost operate, if not alone, then detached from other members of what would be the alliance in this case.
Well, James, you're talking to someone who works on climate change and spent 9 years working for the European Union, and I feel that Brexit was the biggest act of national vandalism in pursuit of personal vanity in the history of public policy making.
Yeah,
and I think if that hadn't happened, we would all be standing up right now looking at a very, very different situation. But in the absence of being part of the European Union, it is still possible to forge those international alliances. It is possible to get on the phone with Mark Rutte and say, Mark, your approach to calling Trump daddy clearly didn't work. We need a different approach.
God,
this is something that's happening on a
weekly basis. Can you imagine writing that up for a PhD thesis in 10 years' time? And history reflected that Mark Rutte probably made an error when he described Donald Trump as daddy during a well-publicized intervention. You get that sent back.
It's part of a wider pattern, and I think the wider pattern, which has been proved to be ineffectual, not only over 1 week, but over 10 years, is that you cannot go on placating someone who is insatiable.
And we've had this phone
in.
We've had this phone in a million times. I mean, January the 6th, albeit that's a midpoint in the window that you describe. That to me was the point at which you realise two things. Number one, all bets were off that were built upon tradition or normality or rules-based international orders. And number two, people in our world, probably in your world as well, but certainly in my world, who had swallowed the Trump Kool-Aid, were never going to regurgitate it. They were never going to vomit it back up again. They were always going to have to pretend that they hadn't made the most epic misjudgment of their lives, except, of course, for Brexit, which most of them also backed. So what would what you describe look like? Bearing in mind that Starmer acts, if not in isolation, then certainly in a slightly different space from other European leaders. Carney might be a more interesting parallel. But what would you have done in his shoes today at that conference?
Well, I think in the conference today, I would have spoken a little bit more forcefully and clearly than Starmer tends to do. I feel that he often comes across in platitudes.
Yes.
And I would have liked him being much more forceful about saying, when it comes to this issue, we are saying this far and no further.
He's never done it, has he? Never done it. And the line keeps moving backwards as he steps backwards. The line moves backwards to where his toes are now.
I don't think he's a good communicator. I mean, no. I'm not a genius in saying that. I think what he is somebody who's accustomed to speaking in legalese and doesn't realize that sometimes as a leader, you have to have a vision and you have to have clarity and not nuance. Nuance is not understood by everybody. And I think this morning was a moment for less nuance and more force. Beyond that, I personally think that people, whether it's the mayor of Minneapolis, whether it's perhaps disaffected Republicans on the Hill, they take force themselves and they take a degree of courage by seeing that courage exercised elsewhere. What we do with Trump, I think, is we respond to each and every individual action as opposed to seeing this as part of a much, much larger pattern that's 10 years in the making. And how do we give, for example, some courage to the members of the Supreme Court next week? Or how do we give some courage to some of the lawmakers on the Republican right that might be disaffected because of what he did in Venezuela, who never wanted to be involved in foreign entanglement? How do we give some courage for them to come and speak out if we don't come and speak out ourselves? And so what I would like to see is just more of a gathering snowball effect of people willing to come out and just challenge this man's picture of reality.
If I was sitting here thinking of moments that might create the environment that you're dreaming of, that you're describing, and there are reports today that the president, that Trump is facing escalating calls to change his stance on Greenland from within his own party, some saying it could hurt the US economically, others worried about the strain on the NATO military alliance. But if I had to pick something that you might cite as a kind of lodestar, there you go, that's what he would need to do for people to start responding in the way that Edward describes. Try this one on for size, Edward. Vladimir Putin has received an invitation to join a US-led peace council for Gaza, the Kremlin has said. True or false?
I would say, given the current circumstances, I would not be surprised if that were true.
It's true. Breaking yeah. news.
And this is a man who systematically put Syria in the rubble.
Yeah. The Russian leader is currently studying the proposal, according to Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. So Trump is offering Vladimir Putin a seat at the table over the future of Gaza, reportedly. And Edward was in the middle, as that piece of paper was put in front of me, of explaining the necessity of not just people pushing back, but also by pushing back, offering support and succor to members of his own administration or members of the American population who need something to rally around or to push back with. I'm reading a brilliant book. Edward, thank you. I'm reading a brilliant book at the moment by Rutger Bregman, who you will know, a couple of things you'll know him for. If you're not familiar with his work, you'll know him as the guy who gave that brilliant speech at Davos about them all turning up in private jets to talk about climate change while never discussing tax avoidance. Never discussing tax avoidance, the richest men and women in the world. And then more recently, of course, he was giving the Reith lectures to the BBC, and the BBC decided to censor him and remove his description of Donald Trump as, I think he called him, probably the most corrupt, openly corrupt American president in history or in living memory. And so Rutger is a man who is not afraid of speaking truth to power. And his new book looks at the people who throughout history have found it within themselves to stand up even when they were the only one for what is right. He's particularly taken with a guy called William Clarkson, who was one of the key abolitionists and who was ploughing a lonely furrow when he started. And what he's learned from looking at people, so Rosa Parks is in there, looking at people throughout history who have done what is objectively right, morally right, is that they often need somebody else to go first. It's not the case that fascism is resisted on the scale that we thought it was. Even in Germany, in France, these countries didn't have the levels of resistance that that were reported in the 50s and 60s. There was a mythology of resistance. But where it did happen, there was always an early adopter or a ringleader. And without the ringleader, people who would do the right thing would not. I think we can all agree today that Keir Starmer has not availed himself of this opportunity to be a ringleader for what is right.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC. West Midlands Police did not engage in a without fear or favour investigation to establish the evidence to lead to the conclusion that these fans should be banned. How did the police, entrusted with dealing with the facts, arrive at that decision? And the answer is, they went into that fact-finding mission wanting to ban the fans. Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
During the Air France rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Whoa. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589, from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down.
Not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
Mm-hmm. A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with 3 tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
With Lidl Plus, you can hit your January health goals with 20% off all grapes and up to 20% off selected gut health products, including your favourite brands like Actimel and Activia. Open the Lidl Plus app to start saving. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer while stocks last. Lidl Plus T's and C's apply. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 28th of the 1st. Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes.
Whatever your day brings, Well Man and Well Woman multivitamins support your nutritional needs, including vitamin B12 to support normal energy release. Well Man and Well Woman, live life well. From Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see vitabiotics.com.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at TamesLinkRailway.com. Terms apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
When I'm feeling my way into a story, which is most mornings at 10 o'clock, does anyone keep a record of all the questions I ask before I settle on the right one? Because I sometimes think at 11 o'clock we could go back to the second best idea. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. That book that I referenced a moment ago by Rutger Bregman is called Moral Ambition. And I probably should have said it's as much a self-help book as it is a history book. The subtitle of the book is How to Find Your Purpose. And it's an era in which many people are feeling that they should somehow be doing more, but they don't know what. And that's where he happens upon the discovery that when proper resistance of proper horrors, fascist horrors, totalitarian horrors, slavery, you know, throughout history, Nazis, proper resistance of that has always taken a human catalyst. It's always involved one person who sort of galvanizes the force. I don't know. He's on Full Disclosure on Friday, and I didn't ask him this question because it's one of those interviews where my brain was just buzzing and fizzing so much that when I thought of something I wanted to ask him next, he'd go off on a mad tangent, and I'd forget the question, and I wouldn't steer him back to what I was thinking, which was that it sounded a bit like bystander effect. You know that if you witness something bad happening, most obviously, I suppose, in a closed environment like public transport, and you want to do the right thing, but you don't quite do it yourself, but as soon as someone else makes the first move, you're in like Flynn. It's a sort of international or much bigger form of that, I think. But it's a highly recommended book. Mark is in Brighton. Mark is a highly recommended caller, a tireless chronicler and observer of American politics, both personally and professionally, and someone from whose insights we've already benefited enormously this year. Mark, what's going on? What made you pick up the phone today?
Well, James, how you doing, first of all?
I'm
Happy
all
New Year.
And to you, too. Thank you.
Well, I'm sitting here with my Greyhound, Ozzy, and Ozzy gave me the answer.
Go on.
It's not an easy answer, but it is an answer. And part of this is going to involve something that Keir Starmer is incapable of doing. Let me start there. What has to happen is somebody, some politician, has to bring together the South Americans, the Asians, and the Europeans, and cripple Donald Trump's enablers. You have to start there, because he'll listen to them. He won't listen to anybody else, but he will listen to the people that bankroll him and the people who benefit from his presidency. And the distasteful part is the fact that he's going to somebody, maybe not Starmer, probably not Starmer, is going to have to deal with the Chinese. The Chinese are holding $800 billion in U.S. debt. They call that debt, Trump's got a problem, an immediate problem. And what do you think would happen, James, if the Chinese tomorrow decided to nationalize iPod City? iPod City. I'm sorry, iPhone City.
No, I've no idea. I mean, well, except that obviously Apple would be in all sorts of trouble.
Yeah, and Apple's Tim Cook would get in contact with Trump and say, what the hell are you doing? See, you have to think laterally when it comes to this. Greenland is, and I know this isn't an exact comparison or exact analogy, but to me, Greenland is Trump's Sudetenland.
Yeah, no, I think that's a help. I mean, potentially it is. It could be that he stops there, his ambitions stop there, but it could be that, you know, what if he fancies the Falkland Islands next? Then what do we do? Or if he allows his ally in Argentina to make eyes at the Falkland Islands.
James, he won't stop. I may have said this to you before, but as far as Trump's concerned, there's a Columbo episode where somebody says, all he wants is all there is. That's it. He wants everything. He wants the Nobel Prize. He wants Greenland. He will set his eyes on something else if he gets away with Greenland.
The
thing that will stop him are the people who enable him.
And that's the only leverage that we have. I've got two thoughts. I'll probably forget what the second one is while I'm explaining to you what the first one is. But you're reminding us, indeed, as Crispin has done in a text, of the parameters of normalcy bias, aren't you? The underlying desire, not just belief, that reason will assert itself, often presents us from seeing things clearly. This needs tactics that are not normal, because it is a situation that is not normal. And that is what you are describing, reaching way beyond the normal arsenal of international relations. Getting China on board is probably a bit pie in the sky, but certainly moving in that direction is not doing big things, big and unprecedented things, to tackle a big and largely unprecedented threat. And the second thought that I had is, what if this is next Monday's phone-in? What if actually Starmer is right in the first instance to at least attempt the negotiated climb down, the negotiated retreat, as opposed to the coerced?
It won't work. It's as simple as that.
Do you have to try it first or not?
Nope. Don't try it, because this is not a man you can reason with. That's what people seem to not understand. Donald Trump is not somebody who you can negotiate with. Zelensky has shown it. Virtually everybody he's talked to since he's been in office.
You give him what he wants. You give him what he wants, or you get humiliated.
Yeah.
Or attacked.
And the way you deal with a bully is punch him in his face. It's as simple as that.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, and I know it's not as simple as that, but a couple of people, Andrew among them, reminding us he's already talked about what he'd do next, to play into your Sudetenland analogy, is, you know, he spoke about Canada in the same way that he spoke about Greenland not that long ago, didn't he?
Yeah, good luck with that. The Canadians will fight him with everything they have at their disposal. And that's why you have to get all of these people together. Carney might not be the worst person in the world to do this.
Sure.
But you've got to get this coalition. You got to get Lula in Brazil. You've got to get the European democratically elected quasi-progressive European countries. You got to get all of them together. And you do have to do business with the Chinese. You have to.
I'm going to run something by you. I hear you. Although at the moment they'll be rubbing their hands with glee at what's going on, won't they? They won't be feeling any particular need to curtail Trump's ambitions, because, of course, the more he indulges in similar behaviour to Putin and Xi, the more they think that they're getting carte blanche to crack on with their imperialistic or colonial ambitions. But I just want to run something by you, more to hear your response out of curiosity than anything else. This is from Paul. The problem is, Mark, that we, by which he means the UK or Europe, we recognise fascism because it started here in the 1930s, but the Americans don't, because they think World War II started in Hawaii.
He's absolutely, absolutely right. Let me tell you something. He just brought something to mind. I have always admired the British people for one thing, over and above anything in the United States, and I'm an American, okay? America has never had to fight a foreign enemy on its own soil. The British have. And the British had, I thought, a great deal of heart that came out of that during the Second World War.
Yeah.
We've never had to do that as Americans.
On European soil, not actually, thankfully, on British soil, not since 1066, and we lost that one, so we tend not to talk about it. But yeah, that threat of
They bombed it. They bombed England.
They did, yes. No, of course they did. We know what that feels
they
like.
They tried to bomb it and overrun it. And America has never had to face that kind of direct threat. Never.
Except in the War of Independence, but that doesn't count. It's not the same. It's not like a foreign aggressor trying to take over. It's actually the domestic resistance trying to repel. You're right, and I don't know whether or not that is relevant to where we are now. The passage of time since 1945, making many Europeans perhaps a little bit slow to recognise what have been obvious signs of fascism for a very, very long time, which is why it is so funny today to hear the people or to read the people who used to complain about Donald Trump being described as a fascist now complaining about Lisa Nandy in an interview on Sky News, refusing to tell the interviewer that she didn't think Nigel Farage was a fascist. Nigel Farage, of course, struggles to choose between his two favourite politicians on the planet at the moment. On the one hand, you have Donald Trump. On the other hand, you have Vladimir Putin. And I can't quite believe this, and sometimes when things drop while I'm on air, I struggle to process them properly because I'm in such a strange place emotionally or adrenaline-wise. But Vladimir Putin has now received an invitation to join a US-led peace council for Gaza, the Kremlin has said. We should probably talk about that at some point too.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, Keir Starmer has called for calm discussion between allies as tensions grow over Greenland. President Trump has threatened tariffs on 8 European allies unless the US is allowed to buy the territory. In a speech at Downing Street, Keir reiterated his position that the future of Greenland was for its people to decide. He said the threat of tariffs was wrong and a trade war would benefit no one.
Alliances endure because they're built on respect and partnership, not pressure. That is why I said the use of tariffs against allies is completely wrong. It is not the right way to resolve differences within an alliance.
Pressure is growing on the Prime Minister to cancel the King's state visit to the US later this year. Keir was pressed on the issue by reporters following his speech.
We do have to remember at all times that it is in our national interest that we continue to work with the Americans when it comes to defence, to security and to intelligence. And that requires us to have a good relationship with the United States.
President Trump has told Norway's Prime Minister that the world will not be secure unless America controls Greenland. He sent a letter to Jonas Gahr Støre. In it, Mr. Trump also said that he no longer feels obligated to think purely of peace after not being awarded the Nobel Peace Prize last year. Do stay with LBC for the very latest throughout today. 39 people have been killed after two high-speed trains have crashed in southern Spain. Dozens more were injured in the collision in the Andalusia region last night. The Kremlin has claimed Donald Trump has invited Vladimir Putin to join the so-called Board of Peace for Gaza. The authority is being set up to oversee the rebuilding of the strip. There's been no confirmation from the United States. Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court for the start of his case against the publishers of the Daily Mail. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information, which it denies. And an international trial is examining whether a finger prick blood test could detect Alzheimer's disease before symptoms appear. The study involves 1,000 volunteers in the UK, Canada and the US. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 59 at 10,179. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many today. Drier for central and southeastern areas with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 11. Time, perhaps, to have a look at what our allies are doing as we continue to contemplate the question of whether or not Keir Starmer could and indeed should have done something differently this morning from the attempt that he essayed to essentially ride two horses, to keep the bigger threats or the bigger responses in abeyance until the possibility of a negotiated settlement is defeated, has disappeared. One editorial this morning reminds us that bullies often back down when confronted. This written before Keir Starmer's speech. Their power relies on fear. France's Emmanuel Macron has said no amount of intimidation, those are in quotes, will alter Europe's position. Denmark has anchored the issue firmly inside NATO's collective security. EU leaders have warned that tariff threats risk a dangerous downward spiral. Even Giorgia Meloni, a successor in some ways of Mussolini's party, is seen as ideologically close to Mr. Trump, as you'd expect from somebody seen as a successor to Mussolini, publicly called the tariff threat a mistake, adding that she has told him so. All of this, of course, written before Keir Starmer gave his speech this morning. We've joined allies, although we are now outside the EU, to talk of a dangerous downward spiral and of undermining transatlantic relations. That's a joint statement that we are part of. But when Keir Starmer stands alone, he is reduced to essentially pleading, or if you prefer, begging for better behaviour from the bully. This line in The Guardian is something that you might want to reflect upon later today. Britain is like Greece to America's Rome, with the added trauma of having once been Rome itself. Canada, probably the best bet, but they are for some form of leadership of resistance. They're also hedging their bets at the moment, as indeed Keir Starmer is. But they've got a trade deal with Beijing in the offing, which brings us back to Mark's point about the necessity of somehow involving China in attempts to clip Donald Trump's wings, even as many very wise people in this country are terrified about the threat that China poses to our security, up to and including the new mega embassy. So these are really important moments. And one of the best things about this job in recent years has been the fact that we can rise to them. The days of this radio station being the preserve of casual racism, taxi drivers and phone-ins about parking tickets and motorway hard shoulders are happily behind us. As we demonstrated in the last hour, you are as likely to be illuminated by my callers, by our callers, as you are by the kind of people that other radio stations and other radio programs book as guests. Although this may well be an hour where we reach, well, we're going to have one guest at least this hour, because Evan Harris is in the High Court today for the opening of Prince Harry's latest salvo against the British newspaper industry, almost single-handedly, although this occasion, of course, joined by fellow doughty defenders of our rights, including Stephen Lawrence's mother, Baroness Doreen Lawrence. So we'll catch up with Evan later this hour. We've got Simon Marks on standby for the final hour to give us, as ever, the perspective from the other side of the Atlantic. And I don't know what else we'll move on to. I don't currently have the first idea how to address the question or the issue of Vladimir Putin, according to the Kremlin, being invited to join the US-led Peace Council for Gaza. Nigel Farage is having a good day, isn't he? He wanted Trump to impose tariffs on the UK, I think. He was calling upon him to do it in Congress, a Congress committee not long ago. And now his other big hero, Vladimir Putin, is, despite being embarked upon a hideous and illegal invasion of Ukraine, is now being reportedly invited onto the top diplomatic table on the planet with regard to the future of Gaza. Quite what the rest of the world will make of that, I honestly have no clue. I only dropped it into the conversation, partly to illustrate the point that was being made by Edward in The Hague about the necessity of action and what the rallying call for action might be. What is the point at which the resistance, the abandonment of normalcy bias? So what's meant by that is that the point at which you stop thinking that everything will be okay because everything is always okay, that reason will eventually prevail, that gravity will ensure that things don't float away. What if there's no gravity? What if Donald Trump operates in a universe that recognizes and respects none of those man-made as opposed to natural laws. And, you know, if somebody like me, who has been pretty clear-eyed about who Donald Trump is and the threat that he poses to most of what we hold dear, still clings to the carcass of normalcy bias, there's still a little bit of me that thinks, no, he can't, no, he won't. What's he doing, Greenland? No, he won't do that. What's he going to do? Put troops? But what? He kidnapped a president of one country and accused him of drug trafficking while simultaneously pardoning and releasing the president of another country who'd actually been convicted of drug trafficking in a US court. If that doesn't break the spell, what does? He continues to lie about the 2020 election. He incited an insurrection, a bloody and potentially murderous insurrection, containing people baying for the blood of his own vice president. Yeah, but normalcy will prevail. It won't, will it? And yet, I don't know whether it's an evolutionary trigger. We cling to the idea that it will eventually prevail, but it won't. You know, I wonder how many members of Henry VIII's court were clinging to normalcy bias up to the point their head ceased to cling to their shoulders. I don't know, and I don't know why I'm thinking about Henry VIII so much at the moment. It's a bit like that old meme from last year about the Roman Empire, isn't it? But we've already brought the Roman Empire into proceedings with that reminder of the supplicant status that the once mighty Greece had to adopt when the walls fell. I want to continue this conversation. You will be unsurprised to learn. And I'm going to put quite a big question in front of you next. Mark had a crack at this, and it was Mark in Brighton, Mark Riley, who cited this notion that there is a meaningful response. It doesn't go to a different school. We're just not entirely sure what it is yet. There is a meaningful response. Macron seems to be there, or at least Macron seems to be relaying the rhetoric. When Emmanuel Macron talks absolutely unquestionably about there being no amount of intimidation that will alter Europe's position. So let's just refresh our memories on what the position is. Donald Trump wants Greenland for reasons that remain a little bit murky. He could access all of the rare earth minerals that are there through trade deals with Denmark. He could have a greater and enhanced military presence there through Denmark's membership of NATO and involving NATO allies. None of the arguments he makes about security or about raw materials actually hold water. But since when did that matter in the Trump universe? Donald Trump wants Greenland. It's hard to imagine a more stark illustration of not having the first idea what the Nobel Peace Prize represents than his intervention on that front this morning, telling the Prime Minister of Norway that he is no longer interested in peace because they didn't give him the Nobel Peace Prize. Again, I'll say that there's two stories today. Regardless of the threats to Greenland, I'm no longer going to pursue peace because you didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize. And, oh, why doesn't Vladimir Putin join the board that will be deciding the future of Gaza? Those two right there are two stories that should shatter normalcy bias. Are you still clinging to the idea that everything is just the same as it always was with a slightly different sauce? It's the same meal. It's American democracy. It's American diplomacy. It's the same sort of setup. It's the same world order. We're just having a different sauce, having a different side. We're having, I don't know, sweet potato fries instead of French fries. It's essentially that it's there. Two stories right there. President of the United States of America says, I don't care about peace anymore because you didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize. Behavior that you would caution and indeed probably discipline your six-year-old for, and even more terrifying if it turns out to be true and you can't trust the Kremlin. But then again, can you really trust them any less than you would trust the White House in the current climate? That Vladimir Putin has received an invitation to join Donald Trump's Peace Council for Gaza. And we haven't really got time yet to talk about specifically about either of those issues, because I want you to talk about this. Do you know what I mean? Again, though, before we get that question up and running, you've got to do a little bit of Brexit. The European Union does not make trade policy in Berlin or in Paris or in The Hague or in Lisbon or Barcelona. It does not make trade policy in European capitals. It makes trade policy in Brussels. There were so many Brexiters who didn't realise that. So he cannot browbeat European institutions designed to withstand coercion. This is really relevant. In fact, Trump, Brexit, Putin, you know, I've said to you for years now that these are all things that you have to see through the same lens. It's not a coincidence that these Venn diagrams often look like circles. Trump, Brexit, Putin. Putin, Brexit, Trump. Brexit, Trump, Putin. I mean, they are three legs of the same stool. Putin desperate for Western destabilization. Brexit absolutely destabilizing the West. Trump absolutely destabilizing the West. Russian interference in his election, Russian interference in Brexit, still criminally, hideously underexplored and underreported. But because we're not in the European Union anymore, we don't have a place in the room where it happens. Europe can stand up to the tariff threat from the United States of America. I don't know what the United Kingdom can do. I don't know what the United Kingdom can do. 03456060973 is the number you need to tell me. And it has to be realistic, remember. This can't be Greece supplicating itself at the feet of the Roman Empire. Well, maybe it is, actually. It has to be realistic. What on earth can Keir Starmer, as the Prime Minister of Brexit Britain, not as Churchill's heir or as a key member of the biggest post-war alliance on the planet, what can Keir Starmer do as the Prime Minister of Brexit Britain in the face of these hideous threats from Donald Trump? If I told you I can't answer that question, am I setting myself up for an education or an empty switchboard? 03456060973 is the number you need to find out. What can the Prime Minister of Brexit Britain do in the face of trade threats from the United States, given that the only trade policies over which he holds sway are the United Kingdom's? He's no longer part, we are no longer part of the biggest single market on the planet. That focuses the mind, doesn't it? That's a bit of a cold shower for saber-rattlers, domestic or trade-based saber-rattlers. So that's question one, 03456060973. Is there anything he can do beyond words? And then question number two becomes, what is it? What is it? What does it achieve? Acting alone, not part of the single market, not part of collective trade policy, framed in Brussels, decided by European leaders. What does the Prime Minister of Brexit Britain have to do? What are his options? What possible course can he follow? And remember, again, I hesitate to bring him into it, but he remains ahead in the polls. This is one of those moments where you find yourself wondering what on earth it was about a European army that Nigel Farage was so diametrically opposed to. Presumably still is. You know? Crikey. A world without NATO or a NATO without America is a world in which a European army becomes a de facto necessity to protect everything that we hold dear. How could any patriotic European be opposed to a defence force for Europe? How could any patriotic Brit be opposed to a defence force for Britain and her allies? We may get onto that, but the question I want you to answer first and foremost is simply, let's say, what would all, if Keir Starmer came out today with all guns blazing, what would those guns have looked like? That's all. So in terms of meaningful and substantive response, because we can sit here till we're blue in the face saying, I wish he'd been a bit tougher, I wish he'd been this, I wish he'd been that. What would it actually have looked like? What would a meaningful and substantive pushback from Keir Starmer have looked like, have sounded like? What threat can he possibly make that would actually make Donald Trump even notice, given that we act since 2016 alone? 03456060973. And while I'm at it, and I may return to this question shortly, and how is this being reported in other European countries? I'm keen, if I can, and it's a bit of a pet and personal obsession, I'm keen to work out how big a role Brexit plays in our position this morning. But that may be of more interest to me than it is to you. But if you're in France, if you're in Germany, if you're in the Baltic states, if you're in Denmark, most obviously, or Greenland specifically, if you're in any of the countries that are also being threatened with these tariffs by Donald Trump, how, in your view, is your government responding? And how, in your experience, is your media reporting it? Okay? 0345-6060-973 is the number you need to answer either, any, or all of those questions.
This is LBC.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues. With our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern. It might be mid-winter, but there's nothing mid about this offer. The new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra brings every winter sport moment to life, as crisp as freshly laid snow. With its stunning 6.9-inch dynamic AMOLED display, razor-sharp resolution. But here's the real win. Claim £250 cashback, conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
All right, resistance up. Let's climb.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, my knee's playing up again.
Have you ever had it looked at?
No, but I've been doing a few stretches.
When my shoulder went, Benenden Health got me expert help. Showed me exactly where I was going wrong.
30 seconds, people.
Press play on your health with physiotherapy and much more. All for less than £16 per person per month. Search Benenden Health. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services, including physio. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Can I have your attention, please? The British Airways original sale is now on. And now
ooh, a sale. Turns out January isn't so bad after all. I could try flamenco dancing in Madrid. Cycle the streets of Amsterdam. Oh, Dad could do with a dose of culture in Venice, though. He still thinks Vivaldi's a supermarket.
Start the year flying with the British Airways original sale. Enjoy £45 fares across the UK and Europe and get up to £200 off holidays. Limited availability. Prices each way based on a return fare. Minimum spend on holiday offers. Book by 19th January. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Anyone else thinking about Suez? No, I'm just weird, right? From Henry VIII to Suez, when we're supposed to be talking about Greenland. But Suez being a moment where Britain's status became clear to people who had been viewing it through rather rose-tinted spectacles. And that, in many ways, was the sort of ebb and flow of the world order, though. Whereas this, what Brexit perhaps has done to Britain in the context of this great threat Europe now faces from the other side of the Atlantic, makes you wonder, doesn't it, whether or not this position, the country that Keir Starmer leads, is not the country that David Cameron led into a referendum. In the context of European unity, we are, I'm not entirely sure what we are. I'm really not. Hamish is in Tring. Hamish, what would you like to say?
Yes, good morning, James. I think my idea I'm just about to tell you might actually connect a lot of the conundrums you're putting to us this morning.
Go on.
I think Starmer could easily lead a conversation with all the other European leaders, regardless of Brexit and what EU represents to us in terms of a trade body or free trade or anything like that. But just Europe is a continent of countries. And I think that he could lead a conversation with them all to approach Denmark.
Why would they let him lead?
Well, he doesn't. He can be in the background. I mean, I'm not saying. In terms of what
Starmer can do, I think I agree with you. Is that all he can do is essentially hope that the European Union let him join in whatever they decide to do.
No, sure. But I think it's if you try and compare it too much with what European Union is, rather than the continent of Europe, i.e., a geographical map. And it's irrefutable who's within.
But we've got military alliances, we've got trade alliances. Countries in continental Europe aren't in the European Union?
Exactly. There are some who don't participate in it.
Not really. They're closer than we are, whether you're looking at Switzerland or... I don't want to turn this... Well, not, maybe I do, actually, but I think you're sounding a little bit pre-Suez in your analysis of Britain's status and role. We are tragically massively reduced.
I think we do still retain a bit of gravitas. I do, and I think it needs exploring, and it's going to be something that leads to this people looking for good ideas. And if a good idea comes from us first, it doesn't mean...
And what is the idea?
The idea is that we approach Denmark and we buy Greenland from Denmark. Europe buys Greenland, everybody.
Okay.
And for one euro, and let's play this out. Okay. We buy it for €1. And then Greenland belongs to the entire continent of Europe, not just one country, Denmark. And then Trump, if he wants to invade, he's engaging in war with the whole of the continent of Europe. Or if he wants to trade, we sell it to him for $1 trillion. I'm making these numbers up.
I know.
That's
not all you're making up, Hamish. Carry on.
No, I know. Yeah, but the point is, we out-Trump Trump. It's a completely wacky idea. He doesn't believe in the normalcy bias, as you were talking about. All existing systems don't work. And I think if he does then move forward, either trying to buy Greenland from the continent of Europe, he'll be kicked out by Congress. Or if he declares war on Europe, he'll be kicked out by Congress.
I mean,
we out Trump Trump.
Okay. I mean, I'll tell you what, if this comes to pass, I'll give you the money myself. You can have all the mystery out board games in the warehouse because it sounds Brexity, oddly, and it sounds Suezy, which I wasn't expecting, and it sounds bonkers. Respectfully.
It is bonkers.
It is completely bonkers. Also, you haven't taken into account what the people of Greenland want. But what you have highlighted, perhaps unintentionally, is that Keir Starmer acting alone can do nothing.
No, correct, he can't. But it doesn't mean to say you can't have a good idea the fact you're outside of Europe.
No,
monopoly on good ideas.
No, but you don't have any treaty-based agreements that would involve other people considering and consenting to your good idea. So did you vote to remain or leave in the European Union, just out of interest?
A passionate Remainer.
No, I thought so. That's all right then. So I'm insulating you and indeed defending you from accusations of Brexity exceptionalism. But yeah, if the idea is brilliant, and I don't know that yours was, but if the idea is brilliant, then it shouldn't matter who came up with it. You would imagine that everybody sensible would go along with it. What you've got in Europe is unprecedented in the post-Brexit period, when Giorgia Meloni is essentially singing from the same hymn sheet as Emmanuel Macron, and the song is anti-Trump. Then you've got a sort of unity that looked like it had been consigned to the dustbin of history not that long ago. And who thought that would be galvanised by the White House rather than the Kremlin? Maybe, I don't know, maybe Hamish has illustrated something a little bit more powerful than I've credited him with. Steve is in Petersfield. Steve, what's going on?
Hi. First call to the show, so be gentle on me.
Of course.
I think what the UK needs to do now is think where it wants to be, because it's trying to please everyone now. It's kind of sat in the middle of the road. And, you know, as one famous politician once said, the middle of the road is a dangerous place to be. So what I think is needed now is that, you know, the UK needs a referendum on whether or not it's allegiance to the US or it's back in the EU. And what allegiance to the US means, I'm not entirely sure. Does it become part of the...
We follow Greenland and then Canada and then the UK and we just hand over. We become, what is it, in 1984? Airstrip 1, I think, isn't it? We become Airstrip 1 in the post-democracy settlement. I mean, you know and I know that we ain't having no referendum anytime soon on anything. But absent the referendum, the choice facing Starmer, you've actually turned it into countries rather than horses. At the moment, he's trying to ride both horses. He's trying to be a European and a post-Brexit ally of Donald Trump's America. And if Trump continues down this path towards and about Greenland, he won't be able to do that, will he? He'll have to choose.
Well, whatever happens next, I think Trump's going to get Greenland, and then it'll be Canada, and then wherever else.
No, he's not. That's a very British perspective. If you were listening to a phone-in in Paris or in Berlin, I don't think you'd be thinking that. And also, you'd be in a country where 80% of the newspapers hadn't been cheerleading for Trump until midnight last night. You'd have been able to rely a lot more upon the honesty and the probity of columnists and commentators than you can do in this country, which brings us, of course, to the other big story in town at the moment, which is Prince Harry's court case, along with others, including Sir Elton John and Dame Baroness Doreen Lawrence, Harry in court today, accusing the Daily Mail of all manner of abuses. And of course, it is the British newspaper ecosystem that has allowed many members of the right-wing political establishment in this country to either close their eyes or pretend not to understand the obvious threat that Donald Trump poses to everything from democracy to decency and most things in between. In fact, just on that front, that simple point about this story, not the Trump story, but looking at what the Mail has done to public discourse in this country and the people they've inflicted upon us, putting Boris Johnson in Downing Street, cheering Liz Truss to the rafters, telling you that Brexit was going to be brilliant. If Harry and his fellow plaintiffs hadn't brought this case against the Daily Mail with this plethora of allegations, it's highly likely that Paul Dacre would currently be the head of Ofcom. Ofcom being the broadcasting regulator that would not only oversee me, but would also oversee the Online Safety Act. Just sort of Boris Johnson's determination to put one of his key client journalists into a big job. He wanted to put Charles Moore, former editor of the Daily Telegraph, in charge of the BBC. And he wanted to put Paul Dacre, editor of the Daily Mail, the one responsible for those deeply fascistic headlines like Crush the Saboteurs, Enemies of the People. He wanted to put him in charge of Ofcom. Such is the arrogance, the entitlement, the hubris of these people on this side of the Atlantic, that we would have had a man running the online safety of this country who used to boast about not having a computer. Whether or not he's got one now, I do not know. But certainly when I was on newspapers, he would be brought on paper things to read rather than pollute his desk on Kensington High Street with a computer terminal. And if this case hadn't been brought, then we could currently be living in a country, regardless of whether it succeeds or fails, if it hadn't been brought at all, we'd currently be living in a country where the future of online safety was being presided over and decided by a man who doesn't know one end of a computer cable from the other. Here's Dominic Ellis with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer appears to have ruled out entering a trade war with the US as tensions continue over Greenland. President Trump has threatened tariffs on 8 European allies unless the US is allowed to buy the territory. In a speech at Downing Street, Sir Keir said the threat of tariffs was wrong and a trade war would benefit no one. He also reiterated his position that the future of Greenland was for its people and Denmark to decide. Stay with LBC for the latest throughout today. The Kremlin has claimed Donald Trump has invited Vladimir Putin to join the so-called Board of Peace for Gaza. The authority has been set up to oversee the rebuilding of the Strip. The US is yet to comment. And Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court for the start of his case against the publishers of the Daily Mail. He and a number of other high-profile figures have accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information, which it denies. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many, drier for central and southeastern areas, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
It took me less than 30 seconds to request my repeat prescription on the NHS app.
That's quicker than making this brew.
And I save time by not ringing the GP practice.
When?
Plus, with notifications turned on, I know as soon as I get a new message.
Big win.
So there's more time for this tea break.
So did you go to that restaurant?
I did. It was so
good. We're delivering an NHS fit for the future. Request repeat prescriptions and turn on notifications to never miss a message. Tap the NHS app.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big Motoring World, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to... That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2 for 1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat, and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:34. So many echoes of so many conversations that we've had on this programme over the last 10 years. Are ringing in my ears today. Most obviously, or first and foremost, perhaps, that idea of the difference between operating as a member of a massive organisation and operating alone. You know, one of the greatest idiocies of Brexit, of course, was the belief, probably best expressed by David Davis. Do you remember him? Kidderminster Harriers have got a player called David Davis now, so he's currently the second best-known David Davis in public life, the former politician. And he said, oh, on the day after the referendum, we'll be in Berlin striking deals with the car company, or whatever it was, demonstrating complete ignorance of how the European Union framed trade policy, even as he insisted that we had to leave it. Imagine being that stupid and that arrogant at the same time. I know nothing about this. I understand nothing, but you must do what I say. And here we are, responding to threats from Donald Trump, alone and independent, or sovereign, if you prefer, as opposed to part of the biggest single market on the planet. So what can we do? Canada could hurt in retaliation on tariffs because they're such a huge customer of the United States. I haven't got the numbers in front of me about how big a dent we might make in their economy by refusing to buy anything that they make or currently sell us. But it would not be as big as the dent left by either Canada or a united Europe, a European Union. What can Britain do alone? It's a horrible question there, especially for those of us who understood the patriotic importance of staying in the European Union. So that is one of the echoes. Another of the echoes, of course, that we are hearing today as we look at this is of the UK's status. Looking at the question of how much power we have. And that's why I'm hearing echoes of Suez, although we haven't had many phone-ins about Suez over the last 10 years. We've had plenty about Donald Trump. And once again, you find yourself sitting here wondering, is this the point at which everybody realises that the only person with Trump derangement syndrome is Trump? Is this the point at which the cheerleaders in the UK media, Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail, is this the point that they realise that they've staked everything upon a fascist? Or at the very least, an insane narcissist? And the other echo that we hear this morning is conversations about the Daily Mail. Because you sit here thinking that in the 1930s, it must have been a consensus. There must have been a unanimous opposition among the UK establishment to resist the rise of Hitler. We must have been all on the same page. Churchill had to fight tooth and nail to turn that oil tanker around. And of course, at the very forefront of sympathies for the Nazis and for the UK pound shop equivalent, Oswald Mosley, at the very forefront of that was the then owner of the Daily Mail, whose grandson will be watching events in the High Court today very closely because Prince Harry is part of a legal case that also includes Elton John, Liz Hurley, Sadie Frost, the mother of Stephen Lawrence, Doreen Lawrence, now of course a baroness, her son murdered in a racist attack, and the former politician Simon Hughes, former leadership contender in the Liberal Democrats, all of them joining forces to examine allegations they have made against the Daily Mail, one of probably Britain's biggest force in media. And Evan Harris, the former Lib Dem MP and former director of the Hacked Off campaign, who nowadays works with the claimant's legal team, has been in court watching proceedings. Evan, thank you, as ever, for your time. How surprised are we that we've got even this far, because, of course, many of my listeners will be aware that newspaper companies historically, whether it's the Mirror Group or Rupert Murdoch's outfit, settle huge amounts of money upon people bringing cases like this while somehow simultaneously insisting that they've done absolutely nothing wrong. And such is the British legal system that the plaintiffs are left with little choice but to go along with that.
Yes, I can only talk generally and agree with that, because obviously I can't talk about whether there have been any moves in that direction here. But you're quite right. A lot of people wouldn't have expected this to go to trial on the basis of previous history. But if you look at what the pleaded cases are, what's striking about this case compared to the News of the World and the Mirror is in those cases there were admissions made by those newspapers, not the Sun until the very end, but by the others, because they were forced to make admissions, and that meant they could settle cases without making all the admissions. They had an excuse to settle. It'd be very difficult, I'm talking again in theory here,
yes,
for the Daily Mail having said, we haven't done anything wrong, nothing zero, right, and then make a settlement, because they would not have the fig leaf that the News of the World had of saying, well, we're paying for this, you know, isolated period that we did it here, even though everyone agreed that the payments they made were much larger than would be reasonable for just that period of unlawful activity. Here, there's no basis for a settlement to be made on the basis of admissions. And also the sheer aggression, which is they're entitled to, let's be clear,
yes,
of the Daily Mail's denial, saying that these are preposterous cases and there's not a shred of evidence, and we've just been hearing a few hours of evidence, so there certainly are shreds of evidence, means that it would be an enormous climb down, I think, were there to be a settlement, which could only really be made if the defendant offered to pay the claimant's costs, which are enormous on both sides in this case.
There's a lot of moving parts there, isn't there? And I don't know that you would be able to answer this question even if you knew the answer to it. But do we know who's driving the Daily Mail Pantechnicon? Is it Rothermere or Dacre?
I have no inside information.
No,
so I can assume that it is Mr. Dacre with the backing of the owner.
Yes.
What has come out in court is that Mr. Dacre is coming to give evidence, and indeed his counsel said that he was going to be the first to give evidence because he wanted to lead his troops. Whether that's into the machine guns or
into the breach,
on a march to victory, it remains to be seen. This is a fiercely contested case, and indeed, I think what will be fascinating about that evidence, which I think will be in mid-late February, is that when Mr. Dacre was cross-examined by David Sherborne, who is now the claimant's lawyer during the Leveson inquiry, Paul Dacre lost his temper after about 20 seconds. He's going to have a whole day cross-examined by David Sherborne, and that will be box office, I think.
A word, if you would, on David Sherborne and the relationship between his experiences at Leveson and his determination to help the plaintiffs in this case pursue their cause. He's on a personal mission as well, I think.
Yes, and that's one way of looking at it. And obviously lawyers get paid for their work. Now, the point about this is that this case is being done on a no-win, no-fee.
Yeah.
So if a lot of lawyers don't do those because they always like to be paid. If this case isn't won or isn't fully won, and we can discuss what winning means, then he won't get paid. I won't get paid, and the other 10 or 12 people working on our relatively small team, we're dwarfed by the other side, also won't get paid. But he has been committed to this. He went through the News of the World and Sun litigation and won, so was paid, and also the Mirror litigation and won. And I think this is kind of completing the set.
I don't imagine we've learnt much this morning except some timetabling and the confirmation that Dacre would be appearing in the witness box.
Well, no, quite a lot comes out on the first day, because the claimants are, the parties are allowed to put in what's called open written submissions. Well, skeleton arguments normally. So we thought we were doing a skeleton, and we did what's considered a rather long one at nearly 200 pages and thought the judge might be annoyed, only to find that there was a nearly 500-page one. that the Associated newspapers produced, which they had the decency not to call a skeleton. They called it written opening submissions. Those are available to the media now from when our counsel opened his oral submissions. And then what we've heard today is an oral, different from the skeleton argument, but taking the judge through specific examples. This morning, what he did was go through examples of what he said, what we say are the obvious use of private investigators for obvious unlawful activity, in relation to some example articles not related to the claimants, but specific examples relating to journalists with bylines on the articles that the claimants complain of, to show, look, they did it here, so it's more likely that they did it there as well. And so that's what we've heard, but we've only David Sherborn will be going for a day and a half, and then the other side will have their go for a day and a half on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then we have witness evidence on Thursday, starting with Prince Harry.
Gosh. I suppose that's partly the answer to my next question in terms of milestones. What should... Is it now certain that this is going ahead in full? Is that now...
Well, cases have been known to settle mid-trial. There's nothing to stop that. But normally the incentive for a defendant to do that is to stop the hundreds of pages of documents I've just referred to coming to the media's attention. So I think it is going to go its full course, and it's 9 weeks, 9 to 10 weeks. So the claimant's evidence, and I'm a witness, by the way, it's why I can't be too specific on some of this, will be going through to, I think, mid-February, and there'll be those witnesses will be cross-examined by Associated. And then their journalists, and Mr. Dacre and some other executives, will be coming forward and will be cross-examined by our counsel.
Is it all or nothing? Do we wait until the final and single verdict drops at the end, or will there be bulwarks along the way that both sides will be looking out for?
The former. So there will be a judgment, and it'll take, I suspect, months for the judge to write, because it's a 9-week trial and he's got to determine hundreds of issues if he chooses to.
Yes.
In theory, there's a point here that they've denied anything, doing anything wrong. And if there's about 80 articles in play. If the claimants win on one, then the Mail have committed unlawful activity. They have to win on all. We just have to win on one. Now, that doesn't mean that we'll get our costs if we only win on one. That's a separate question. But in terms of the moral victory, proving that this happened at the Mail, is what we're seeking to do, hoping to obviously win on all our pleaded claim. And they hope, in fairness, and they have made their denials, that they can throw this out both on grounds of liability and on grounds of limitation, i.e. the claimants are too late. And that's one of their, that's a key part of their defence, in fact, that they've written about that, as have their allies in the Telegraph.
So this would involve simultaneously claiming that they'd done nothing wrong, but that it was too late to actually bring a case against about the things that they had done wrong.
Well, so allegedly. The claimants argue, so the claimant, they say the claimants should have known when the article was published. That's more than 6 years ago, which is the rule. The claimants say we didn't know because it was concealed, and the article didn't say we got this unlawfully. And then there were these denials in the Leveson inquiry, for example, and ever since. And yes, the Daily Mail's case is a nuanced one, that's a polite word, which is that the claimants shouldn't have believed our denials, even though our denials were correct. But that is that it does seem odd, and it does seem
it's no odder than the point that we began this conversation with, which is of course the many cases of media companies settling and involving huge sums of money and simultaneously claiming that they've done absolutely nothing wrong. Which perhaps we should end with a quick word on that for people who still don't fully understand it. This is because if I took you to court, Evan, perish the thought. And an offer of £100,000 of £1 million to settle was made. And then we went to trial and the judge awarded me £100,000 at the end of that trial. I would be in an unenviable situation.
Yes, because you could have said you could have got what you were after, and therefore you're liable for the costs of an unnecessary trial.
So I would then have to pay, in this case, £40 million or £38 million, which is the projected cost of Harry's showdown with the Mail.
So that's yes, and obviously I can't say if offers have been made and not.
No, of course not. But I know people like Hugh Grant have been very outspoken in the past about the suboptimal nature of this legal device.
Yes, so there's another. So you can win, but still lose on costs if you haven't beaten an offer.
And the sums of money involved are sums of money that would upend the lives even of very, very wealthy people by normal standards, which is why this collection... Sorry.
Well, generally speaking, people have insurance.
Yes.
Okay, so I think that's an overstated point.
Okay.
Obviously, the press have run that Prince Harry and Elton John and the people who don't have quite as much resource as them are at financial risk. One can assume that there is insurance in place because the premiums, if the claims are successful, are paid by the other side.
Got it.
So and all those cases in the News of the World litigation were insured, and all the premiums were paid, and the insurance companies never paid out because they all won. Mm. And that means that the insurance companies have done very well out of this litigation, and the newspapers have had to pay large premiums. Clearly, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in this case, and it is the most contested. I think it's fair to say
that
because there have been no admissions, the stakes are very high.
Indeed they are. Final question, which quite a few of my callers, texters, are keen for you to answer. Where should they follow this? Because I don't know whether they're overcome with undue cynicism and suspicion and paranoia, but they're not entirely sure that they'll be reading a full and frank account of it in any of the newspapers that have already been on the wrong end of this kind of legal action.
Yes, well, I think you can... the BBC, Sky and ITV... have experienced court reporters reporting in a balanced way according to the rules, which is if you report one side, you need to say it's denied, and you should try and, you know, give both sides. Obviously, it's over a week, really, because it's our day today and tomorrow morning. The Guardian also and those, you know, the Financial Times, the usual suspects. The Telegraph have been far worse than the Mail in their coverage of this. It's almost as if they feel they're owned by the Mail. And their coverage, which is focused on me, embarrassingly, has been designed to put pressure, I say, and I've said this publicly before, on some of our witnesses to show that, you know, will be punished, and the Mail's done that to an extent, and the Times. And what should be realised is that the editor of the Telegraph and the Times were news desk executives at the Daily Mail at the time. We say the news desk knew this was going on, so they have a vested interest. But none of their coverage admits that there's a vested interest. I mean, I'm not saying they're guilty of anything.
Oh, of course not.
But it's not clear that won't be determined at this trial. But I think it's something that, you know, I think that journalists with high ethics would say that should be made clear.
And the Daily Mail
had a journalist who is pleaded and is giving evidence. He's been writing their court reports. And that's been pointed out in private eye, how astonishing that is, with nary a mention of the fact that there's a conflict of interest.
We can add private eye to that list, although, of course, they won't be providing daily
private
updates.
Private eye are kind of fickle.
Yes, fair enough. And, of course, for people who don't know, the Daily Mail is currently embarked upon an attempt to buy the Daily Telegraph as well. Anything else you feel we should have mentioned, Evan?
Well, just to say that we've got Prince Harry giving evidence
on Thursday,
and on Friday, I believe, this can change, Baroness Lawrence. And the Lawrence case is the one that the Mail is most sensitive to, because for the reasons that they have built a reputation on the fact that they were the champions of the Lawrence family, and her case is that they were, while they were championing her, they were spying on her, and that's been a betrayal. And again, there is very intense feelings on both sides, it's fair to say, because the Mail say that they're deeply offended and upset by her accusations, and she says she's deeply upset by what she says they did.
And we will hopefully be able to call upon you a little more as the case continues than we have done today. Thank you, Dr. Evan Harris, the former Liberal Democrat MP, former director of the Hacked Off campaign, and nowadays, as you heard, a member of the claimant's legal team, and indeed personally involved in this case too. And just a quick word, if I may, on that idea of newspapers intimidating potential witnesses or indeed potential plaintiffs. Prince Harry and his wife's entire lives over the course of the last decade or so can be viewed as an exercise in intimidation by the UK media. Think of all the people you know who've got strong opinions about Prince Harry, a military hero, or indeed about his wife, a successful actress. Think of all the people you know in your life who've got strong opinions about them. Oh, no, I don't like them. Oh, I don't trust her. Where do you think those opinions came from? You can malign and demonise innocent people so completely and comprehensively that you've probably got family members who think that they have a bead upon these two characters, while Paul Dacre's personal history will be completely new to them. They'll know nothing about the man responsible for newspaper headlines that wouldn't have been out of place in 1930s Germany. And yet Harry and his wife have been turned into, or the massive attempt to turn them into, pariahs, public enemies. That's how it works. It's also, of course, how the mafia works.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What do you want to hear from our Prime Minister? Sir Keir Starmer will give an address to the nation. Is understood concerning the threat to Greenland.
The use of tariffs against allies is completely wrong. It is not the right way to resolve differences within an alliance.
Your reaction to that speech, Tony's in Willesden Green.
Completely toothless speech. I wanted him to say that he will reciprocate with tariffs. You can't stand up to a bully like that with calm discussions. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Graham in Newark.
He was doing an entirely predictable speech, desperately trying to sound statesmanlike.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Can I have your attention, please? The British Airways original sale is now on. And now
ooh, a sale.
Like...
Turns out January isn't so bad after all. I could try flamenco dancing in Madrid. Cycle the streets of Amsterdam. Oh, Dad could do with a dose of culture in Venice, though. He still thinks Vivaldi's a supermarket.
Start the year flying with the British Airways original sale. Enjoy £45 fares across the UK and Europe and get up to £200 off holidays. Limited availability. Prices each way based on a return fare. Minimum spend on holiday offers. Book by 19th January. T's and C's apply.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve...
Sorry. Just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Always dreamt of running your own business? It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
During the Air France Rendezvous, take advantage of great offers. Until the 27th of January, book your flight to Dubai from £399 or Hong Kong from £589 from London Heathrow via Paris, return including tax. And from the 29th of March, you can reach Paris and beyond with our new flights from London Gatwick. Elegance is a journey. Air France. To book and for terms and conditions, visit airfrance.co.uk.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 11:57. I suppose, enjoy seeing the desperate contortions of people who voted for Brexit at times like this, pretending that they haven't damaged the country or brought the country to a place where it wields considerably less power than it would have done previously. But something that you're obviously not aware of, and that's not a criticism, because I probably should have told you sooner. And it's only been in position since 2023, so albeit that we would be much stronger had we not left the European Union, it was not something that we actually surrendered when we did. But you need to know about the anti-coercion instrument. You may have heard of it last year when the sort of trade negotiations and the first threats of tariffs were made. But essentially, Brussels, by which, of course, we mean 27 countries, Brussels has the power to limit American companies' access to public procurement contracts in Europe. It has the power to take measures such as import and export restrictions on goods and services in a single market of, count them, 450 million people. So it has the power to hurt the United States of America, and indeed it threatened to do so last year during those negotiations, where Trump was threatening to introduce very steep levies, but a deal was eventually reached. American tech giants have a services surplus with the EU, so they would suffer. And last year, Brussels drew up a list of services that it would potentially target. Lithuania used it when it accused China of banning its exports because of Taiwanese diplomatic representation. So you probably need, or I probably need on your behalf, to swat up a little bit more on this. But that simple thing, often described demotically as a bazooka, the anti-coercion bazooka that is in place and on the table, is something to which the United Kingdom, to which Brexit Britain, has absolutely no access unless they decide to let us join in. Well done, everybody. Are we going to continue with this? I feel that we're scratching the sides of it still, but there's an awful lot of other stuff going on as well, not least the $1 billion you might have to pay if you want to join Donald Trump's Gaza board, and the invitation that has reportedly been issued to Vladimir Putin, yeah, you heard me correctly, to sit on it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Keir Starmer appears to have ruled out entering a trade war with the US as tensions continue over Greenland. President Trump has threatened tariffs on countries, including the UK, who oppose his efforts to buy the territory. Speaking in Downing Street this morning, Keir said the situation was serious and that he'd work to protect Britain's interests. He insisted talks would continue to find a solution.
Such measures hurt British workers, British businesses, and the British economy. I spoke to President Trump, to European leaders, to find a solution rooted in partnership, facts, and mutual respect.
The White House has previously signalled that the US would consider military action to take Greenland. Sir Keir Starmer was asked if he believed that Mr. Trump was genuinely considering such a move.
I don't, actually. I think that this can be resolved and should be resolved through calm discussion, but with the application of the principles and values that I've set out in terms of who decides the future of Greenland, and making clear that the use of tariffs in this way is completely wrong.
Stay with LBC throughout the day for the latest. In other news, Spanish authorities say a high-speed train crash happened on a stretch of track that was renovated last year. At least 39 people have died after a Madrid-bound train derailed and then was struck by another train in Andalusia last night. Dozens more people were injured. The Kremlin says Vladimir Putin has been invited to join a US-led peace council for Gaza. The authority is being set up to oversee the rebuilding of the strip. The Russian president is said to be considering the offer. The US has yet to confirm the claim. Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court in London for the start of his case against the Daily Mail's publishers. He's among several high-profile figures who've accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information. The firm strongly denies the claims. and 61 Labour MPs have written to Keir Starmer, urging him to bring in a social media ban for under-16s. They argue successive governments have done too little to protect young people from unregulated platforms. The Prime Minister has said that all options remain on the table after previously ruling out such a measure. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 57 at 10,178. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy with outbreaks of rain for many, drier for central and southeastern areas with a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw. It's a very personal draw. So you think of a personal way to spend £1 million.
I would hire a hype man so everything I do would suddenly be epic.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw. So...
let's go, Kev. Goat cheese bagel for lunch.
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I think it's looking at what CNN has said about the European response. It's quite sad, isn't it, that when they write this line, it's not often that Europe speaks with one voice or responds with such urgency. They're talking about a Europe that we're not in. They're effectively talking about a European Union plus Norway, I suppose, in this case, whose Prime Minister received the message from Donald Trump overnight in which he says he's not interested in peace anymore because they didn't give him the Nobel Peace Prize. This is because the Nobel Committee is based in Oslo, in Norway. So Donald Trump, under the impression that the presumably he thinks that what awards can we think of something funnier than the Booker Prize, an award that's given out. Presumably he thinks that the American government decides who wins an Oscar. But what would be the British equivalent? What's the biggest prize you can win in this country? Rear of the Year? He probably thinks Rear of the Year is in the gift of the UK Prime Minister, does he? So because Nobel is based in Norway, he's blaming the Norwegian government for the fact that he didn't get it. Because that's how his tiny brain works. He thinks he should be able to decide who wins an Oscar. He's always casting his views on late night television, isn't he? And telling media companies who they should hire and fire. He honestly believes he should be in charge of absolutely everything. Which is quite magnificent in a way, when you think about it, but also, utterly ludicrous, lunatic and hideous. So what would it be? What would be the best punchline to that joke? Donald Trump thinks that the Norwegian government award the Nobel Prize. He's also under the impression that the British government is in charge of deciding who gets Rear of the Year. Doesn't quite work, does it? What would be, I don't know, the Booker Prize, a Brit Award, a BAFTA? Okay, we could go on, couldn't we? But that's it, that's his brain. And that's the other bit missing from today's analysis of the Greenland situation. The question of why he wants it. And the fact that it could well be because of how maps work. And once he's arrived on a course of action, of course, he won't step down from it unless he has to, unless he's forced to. And the way maps work, if you try to map a globe shape on a flat surface, then the bits near the top and the bottom of the globe, in other words, the poles, as geographers call them in this case, look much bigger than they do on the globe. Because you need a flat, rectangular or square piece of paper that, expands the top and the bottom of... Anyway, someone I love very dearly was looking at a map at the weekend and they said to me, oh, Greenland's a lot bigger than I realised. And I said to them, because I only learnt about it last week, you haven't heard of the Mercator projection, have you, darling? The Mercator projection is what I've just tried in my own a very ungeographical way to describe to you. And there are a lot of people, much cleverer than me, who think that Donald Trump has looked at a map that distorts the real size of Greenland and decided that he wants Greenland because it's very big. And given that this is a man who almost certainly believes that people seeking asylum have been released from the institutions that we used to call asylums, as in, the Victorian language of lunatic asylums, so many pronouncements he's made on the subject. Mercator, is anyone going to start correcting my... pronunciation. I thought I got it right last time. Mercator. The Mercator projection. Anyway, a man who clearly believes that anybody seeking asylum as a refugee has been released from an asylum, as in the Victorian institutions known as lunatic asylums, could easily be building his entire foreign policy with regard to Greenland on the fact that he thinks it's much bigger than he is because he doesn't understand how maps work. Oh, boy. Anyway, that line from CNN. It's not often that Europe speaks with one voice or responds with such urgency. A Europe, sadly, that doesn't really contain us for the next stage, although the statement that is under discussion here does have Keir Starmer's signature on it. That emergency meeting in Brussels yesterday came after about a quarter of the population of Greenland's entire country joined protests against any potential annexation. So again, I wonder whether in this country we're not fully engaged with the reality of what's happening in continental Europe. A quarter of the population of the capital joined protests against any potential annexation. There was a lot less careful treading from other leaders than we've seen from Keir Starmer this morning. I mean, the Truth Social post that Donald Trump has made are unhinged, but we're used to that now. Emmanuel Macron describing the threat of tariffs as unacceptable. Keir Starmer sounding more bellicose yesterday than he did today when saying that applying tariffs on allies for pursuing the collective security of NATO allies is wrong. Macron went further. No intimidation or threat will influence us, neither in Ukraine nor in Greenland nor anywhere else in the world when we are confronted with such situations. That's that's kind of the point, isn't it? Mark Rutte, who not long ago was calling him daddy, has said that he has spoken to Trump and we will continue to working on this. I look forward to seeing him in Davos later this week. I'm not sure that Rutte is rising to the occasion as we speak. And even Giorgia Meloni, the Italian Prime Minister, who's an almost fully signed up member of the Donald Trump fan club, given that her party rose from the ashes of Mussolini's fascist movement, that probably shouldn't be surprising, has described Trump's latest move as an error while on a state visit to South Korea, although she subsequently, I don't know whether this is clever diplomacy or not, she's trying to portray Trump as having essentially misunderstood the resistance to his plans to annex Greenland, claiming that there's been a problem of understanding and communication. So she's trying to keep her own little fire escape open while publicly criticising somebody she'd previously been reluctant to criticise. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Simon Mark's with us at 12:30 from the other side of the Atlantic. Question of whether or not there is anything more that Keir Starmer can do will probably concern us until then. And if there is, what is it? Akib is in Birmingham. Akib, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Just want to thank you for all that you've done.
Fair enough.
You know, you make me feel like I'm not senile and going crazy on my own.
Well, so it cuts both ways. Thank you, too.
All right. So I'm going to just read it because I don't want to go off topic here. 90 years ago, we had the Olympics held in Germany.
Yes.
And now we're going to have the World Cup held in the USA, along with Mexico and Canada, I know, but most predominantly it is going to be held in the USA. I'm calling for a European boycott of the World Cup. I think that we should not be giving Trump a world stage to be on. We saw what he did with the Club World Cup. He made it all about him. I think that he's going to make it quite difficult for fans to go there. I think ICE agents are going to be all over people of colour. And I think that it will, within 3 months of doing so, he will reverse a lot of his tactics. I think, secondly, we should stop buying oil in dollars, just like China has done with Saudi Arabia, buying in their own currency. And thirdly, we should put a tariff on all Tesla products. We should fight fire with fire.
This may be a bit of a pet subject, because by we, you mean Europe, I think. You don't just mean, because we're not going to land much. We're not going to land much operating alone, are we?
No, we're not. But this is where Starmer needs to stand
about
up
the World
and be
Cup idea.
We should just not.
How can we?
Hang
on a minute. FIFA just gave him the FIFA Peace Prize.
Yeah, but that's like me claiming to be King of Birmingham.
Yes, I thought Joe Lycett was king of Birmingham.
Oh, I don't know. I just moved here 2 weeks ago. I don't know. Should I give him a chat or something?
Would it make any difference? I mean, who knows? I don't know how many phone-ins we can do dancing.
I mean, the guy only cares about money, right? That's one thing that we can pinpoint on. The guy only cares about money and his public image of being king of the world. We take the World Cup away from him. All European countries that have band together, because right now we might not be in the European Union, but we are part of a European collective that have disowned America for what they've said about Denmark and Norway.
I've got normalcy bias here. I'm thinking that's far too outrageous. We couldn't possibly do it. Well, when was the last time? It was the Americans boycotted the Moscow Olympics, didn't they? Which is why we did so well. in the medals table.
Was that the Winter Olympics, wasn't it?
No, it was the main one. It was when Alan Wells won the 100 metres final. And
I'm too young to remember.
But you need, I mean, individual boycott. The problem is we haven't been able to keep the Russians out of Wimbledon, really, have we? So they'd all have to operate as one.
It's not the greatest thing in the world, and I do feel sorry for any Scottish person listening right now. I sincerely apologise for this idea.
Brutal.
Because I'm a huge Liverpool fan, and I love Andy Robertson to bits, and like, honestly, he's one of my favourite players of all time, and I don't want to see something happen like that. We could hold a cup in Europe, put the final in Denmark as a show of solidarity, but I think the time to play say to these fascists is over. I mean, what Germany did in the 1936 Olympics, we had Hitler there. We've got all the videos on that time, right? And he's sitting there like king of the world and watching all of these people compete, and it just fed into his belief that probably, you know what?
I get away with it because however bad I am, they still treat me like I'm part of the gang. I love the idea of somebody dipping in and out of the programme today and hearing some bloke in Birmingham insisting that Andy Robertson was one of his favourite football players of all time while discussing Donald Trump's possible annexation of Greenland and then citing
he's not loved enough, you
the
know
1936
that.
Berlin Olympics as a precedent for what we should do next. I love it. Okay, thank you. And what else are you going to put on the list? Simon Nixon, a journalist I really admire, formerly of the Times, Wall Street Journal, Robbers sent me a little link to something he said. Now, he's brilliant on Substack. Starmer's speech confirms what I speculated here, that Britain will be the weakest link in Europe's attempts to stand up to Trump over Greenland. Wouldn't that be the ultimate, if you like, proof of Brexit, if it does leave Starmer feeling, whether rightly or wrongly, that he has no choice but to actually bend the knee for the man trying to steal sovereign European territory. I wonder where that will leave all the sovereignists. It's 12:15.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
The people are friendly on the telephone. You can always get a problem solved. You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Can I have your attention, please? The British Airways original sale is now on. And now
a sale. Turns out January isn't so bad after all. I could try flamenco dancing in Madrid. Cycle the streets of Amsterdam. Oh, Dad could do with a dose of culture in Venice, though. He still thinks Vivaldi's a supermarket.
Start the year flying with the British Airways original sale. Enjoy £45 fares across the UK and Europe and get up to £200 off holidays. Limited availability. Prices each way based on a return fare. Minimum spend on holiday offers. Book by 19th January. T's and C's apply.
With Liver Plus, you can hit your January health goals with 20% off all grapes and up to 20% off selected gut health products, including your favourite brands like Actimel and Activia. Open the Liver Plus app to start saving. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer while stocks last. Liver Plus T's and C's apply. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 28th of the 1st. Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes.
Octopus Energy. great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:17, I make no apology for bringing Brexit into our contemplations this morning. There are some mornings when I should apologise. It is something of an obsession of mine, partly because of what I do for a living and the fact that I've probably been more exposed to the brainwashing and the gaslighting than anybody else in the country. I honestly mean that. I don't know how many of the calls or the clips from the heyday of that post-Brexit period you've seen, but it was an absolute game changer for me personally and professionally, because I get to deal with the people that have listened, dare I say it, to some of my colleagues and ended up believing things that are obviously untrue. And the same is true of Trump, Boris Johnson, not just Brexit. But that thing about the European army, and of course talking about the Daily Mail today, do you remember when David Cameron issued a warning about what a Brexit might do to us in the context of European peace? Absolutely unhinged responses to a relatively sober comment during the referendum about how we couldn't take European security architecture for granted. It could change. Two headlines from the Daily Mail for you, just to reflect upon. One from 2015 or early 2016. David Cameron's doom-laden warning of Brexit causing war in Europe is rejected by 9 in 10 voters, new polling reveals. And one from March of last year. Why World War III is already here and how the UK will need to lead in America's absence as Team Trump risks losing global conflict to the West's enemies following bust-up with Zelensky and concessions to Putin. That's before he even set his sights on sovereign European territory. Absolutely extraordinary. And I've shared on Blue Sky that article I was mentioning to you by Simon Nixon, formerly of The Times, before it lurched to the hard right, and a commentator of particular perspicacity. Milan is in Playa Blanca in Espanyol. Milan, what made you pick up the phone?
Good afternoon, James. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I was listening to Aggie Chambray earlier, and then also the young gentleman, I think, who called about 45 minutes ago, who you asked whether he was a Remainer or a Brexiter.
Yes.
And both are commenting about the, I think Aggie Chambray was talking for Nick, talking about PM Starmer being a bridge.
Yes.
And I just, and then also, I believe in one of your three questions you asked how the continent is perceiving the whole situation.
Mm.
I believe that was one of your three questions.
Yeah, well, I've asked more than three questions today, mate, but you can answer any of them.
I just think maybe we need to take a bit more of a step back from this, how I would describe a tad bit of English exceptionalism. Honestly, in the media in Europe,
yeah,
it's not that there's no malice intended, but we're just not being mentioned. It's not like I watched the German talk show last night, the Karim Joska. There's no mention of us. There's nothing intended negatively about it, but it's just an irrelevance.
Yeah.
We're not part of the trade club. And also, I think many Brits, particularly the English, I guess, we need to understand that the EU isn't just about trade. It's a political club. It's a social club. And I just don't think that...
And increasingly, perhaps, a military power as well.
Absolutely. And I fully back up your words about the EU army. And I also never really understood before.
You know, of all the disgusting contributions Farage has made to public discourse in this country, the idea that Europe should be vulnerable to Russia or, it turns out, the United States is probably, in the great scheme of things, among the most disgusting. I'm talking about things he's done while a politician, not the things he did at school to Jewish classmates and sundry other people from minority backgrounds. According to a huge number of them, of course, he continues either to deny it or to change his story every 10 seconds. But why the hell would you want Europe to be less safe? And we know that his mate Nathan Gill was taking money from a Kremlin stooge for parroting Kremlin talking points, but presuming that Nigel Farage never took money from anybody, except the owners of Russia Today, I suppose, why on earth would anybody in this country want Europe to be less safe, less protected from aggression?
And just two quick further points related to what you're saying. You took the wind out of my sails a bit with the bazooka thing. I started to see reports of that last night.
I had to read it in France 24. I haven't read much about it in the UK media, but you can understand why.
You've explained it as well, what it is.
Thank you.
Thanks for explaining. And also, I think that the Europeans are stepping back from ratifying the, ironically, deal they arranged in Scotland last summer.
Yeah.
I think is. But just in terms of what Britain could do, it's really a question for you. I mean, would this not lend more credence to the wish from the Lib Dems to sort of set up a customs union with the EU? I mean, doesn't it not? And then you look at the customs arrangement that they arranged last week with Latin America. Doesn't this also lay credibility to that?
I mean, if I were to be uncharacteristically generous towards Brexiters, what Trump's rug-pulling exercises prove is the necessity of strengthening all of our other relationships, even, you know, that would be true even if we hadn't damaged the biggest one of all irreparably just 10 years ago. But yeah, I agree with you. But those are all chapter two, aren't they? And in the context of chapter ones, beyond Akib's suggestion that we boycott the World Cup, I'm not entirely sure what would turn Trump's head, are you?
I think the Prime Minister's done exactly the only thing he can do.
Today?
I don't think, yes, absolutely. But I think in terms of what he can start to do pretty quickly, I think single market in the EU, I think that is a step too far. But I think
Norway in the customs union, I always get confused. Norway's in the customs union.
No, Norway's in the
single market. All right, okay.
I just think that would be, so that's where goods can be. So we'd essentially have to roll back on all those arrangements that Kemi Badenoch made and all that sort of stuff. And
those so-called trade agreements, we'd have to undo them in order to get. But yeah, well, I think Ed Davey possibly is going to be vindicated in all sorts of ways by international events. But of course, he's unbound by the requirements of actual power, isn't he? So there's things that Starmer no doubt privately contends and believes that he couldn't currently say in public. And these might be among them. I don't know. While I have you, you're not the only Milan to ring LBC, so I hope Nigel isn't getting mixed up.
Chitai and Chizik.
That's the fellow. His mum ran the post office. I know them actually, but I think this is aimed at you. Can you please ask him why he hasn't called in to Nick Abbott for ages? He is missed by Nick and his listeners.
No, it's not me. I've not called.
Oh, it's a different one. Oh, well, there you go.
I'm flipping out,
Nigel, honestly, if you can't. but that's great. And we're going to stay in Spain for the next caller because, I mean, this is my favourite thing about phone-in radio is when the name of a caller is the single first syllable of the place that they're calling from. I probably said that last time Ben in Benidorm called in, if indeed he has called in before, but I make no apology for it. Don in Doncaster. Hal in Halifax. Any others? Keith in Keithley? That works. And now Ben in Benidorm. Ben, what would you like to say?
I have called in before, as you doubtless maybe don't remember, but actually makes me giggle every single time.
It's the Halifax advert from our childhood. It's the Halifax advert, isn't it? Don in Doncaster.
Can I just, look, a slight moment of light relief.
Go on.
But I have to say that, and I'm probably being naive, And please excuse me if I am, but I just wish the craven response that Starmer has had to Trump throughout his throughout, full stop. It just makes me feel quite ashamed to be British. And I know that we could say, well, look, we've got no choice. But do you know what? Yeah. I speak to my mum earlier, right? And my mum was talking about the fact that when my grandfather lost five brothers in the Second World War. My other grandfather came home from D-Day and died shortly afterwards, because he just got so poisoned by the stuff, right?
Yeah.
Everyone took something on the chin, right, when they were fighting fascism. Everyone took something on the chin, right? Now, the fact that If Starmer has a response, it will probably be reciprocal tariffs, right? Yeah. That is not taking that much. For us as a nation, right, what, we have to pay a little bit more for McDonald's or something? I mean, come on, we're having a giraffe.
It would be a lot more than that. It would be everything from you know, oil-based products to technologies, services as well,
not just goods.
But I don't think our retaliation would hurt him at all.
I don't think it would hurt him, but it would at least restore some national pride, would it not?
Well, Brexit was supposed to restore national pride. These meaningless emotional gestures don't necessarily deliver the oomph that we would want them to. I prefer boycotting the World Cup.
Boycotting the World Cup is not a bad idea, but again, I'm not sure that would give us any.
So there was nothing today to stop Starmer from saying, "If you do it, we will do this." What he appeared to say, and this is where I think you're probably on the money. What he appeared to say was, "Even if you do it, we won't do this," which is, I think, close to craven, isn't it?
Yes, and this is where it's upsetting, simply because I think that so many of your relatives, my relatives, the nation's relatives have done an awful lot to sort of fight the F word.
Mm. And here it is. And you're in Spain, where they know a lot more about it than we do.
Yeah, well, indeed, yeah. This is my thing, that I think in Spain, in part because of that history, that relatively recent history as well, people are genuinely scared.
Are they, though? Because I often wonder about this. I used to subscribe to this school of thought, but Italy was, you know, under the jackboots of Mussolini, and they've never stopped flirting with fascism in the post-war period. So I don't know that having a bit of a scare back in the day. I think what was different about Nazi Germany was actually the Holocaust. I don't think it was any of the other elements of Nazism that gave the country a cold bath in 45. I think it was realizing what had come in under the cloak of Nazism and the hideousness of the Holocaust that turned generations of Germans against repeating history. I don't know that I see Spain and Italy in quite the same space.
Okay, so in Alicante, there's just outside
the south of France, mate. The south of France is full of very, very right-wing people.
I agree, but in Alicante, just outside the central market, there's a sort of monument, if you like, or a I don't know what you call it, a sculpture, right, which commemorates the fact that that in that central market, Franco himself invited Italian and Nazi bombers to bomb that central market. Civilians, essentially invited people to bomb their own invited foreign countries to bomb their own population, right? That sticks really hard with people on the Costa Blanca and the Costa del Sol. And what they remember, because this is within recent memory, right? There are still people alive today that can remember what it was like to have no market. People starved because of that, you know. 300 people were killed on the day, but then other people died because there was no food around, right? So there is a strong memory of fascism in Spain. I mean, long may it continue, by the way.
No, of course. And yet, in this country, when the Venezuela, where Maduro was kidnapped by Donald Trump, we had various far-right characters and hard-right characters on social media calling for Trump to do the same to Keir Starmer. And we've had political figures in this country calling on Trump to impose tariffs on the United Kingdom, albeit that these are the economic weapons in the US arsenal, as opposed to actual weapons. The point stands, patriotism. Often the last refuge of a scoundrel, and the kind of people who scream about it loudest while defending the plethora of tatty flags on lampposts up and down the country are the people who would sell us out in a heartbeat to whatever the aggressive fascistic regime with us in its sights looked like in this case, the United States of America. Ben, I'm cracking on only because I'm late for the news, and Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has ruled out retaliatory measures in the face of threats from Donald Trump to introduce tariffs over his takeover of Greenland. The US president has warned countries who don't support his plan to take control of the Danish territory they will face levies. At least 39 people have died after a high-speed train derailed, then was hit by another in Spain last night. Spanish authorities say it happened on a stretch of track that was renovated last year. And Prince Harry is at the High Court for the start of his case against the publishers of the Daily Mail. He's accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information, which it denies. LBC weather, cloudy for many with a few patches of rain in places, especially in Northern Ireland. Drier and brighter to the southeast. East, Central and West Scotland, as well as West Wales and South West England, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now,
I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
And when teams feel supported, they can achieve anything.
Sorry, just had even more of my team are off ill.
Have you tried Benenden Health? It's easy to set up. They've got a GP helpline you can book 24/7.
Where were we?
A coffee break, hopefully.
Press play on your people's health with a wide range of healthcare services for less than £16 per employee per month. Search Benenden for Business. Fee review periodically. T's and C's apply. Qualifying periods apply for some services. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Can I have your attention, please? The British Airways original sale is now on. And now
ooh, a sale. Like turns out January isn't so bad after all. I could try flamenco dancing in Madrid. Cycle the streets of Amsterdam. Oh, Dad could do with a dose of culture in Venice, though. He still thinks Vivaldi's a supermarket.
Start the year flying with the British Airways original sale. Enjoy £45 fares across the UK and Europe and get up to £200 off holidays. Limited availability. Prices each way based on a return fare. Minimum spend on holiday offers. Booked by 19th January. T's and C's apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swim with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Always dreamt of running your own business. It might be easier to achieve than you think. With a franchise, you benefit from a tried and tested business model and ongoing support. Kickstart your journey to business ownership. Visit the British and International Franchise Exhibition on the 30th and 31st of January at Olympia, London. Meet exciting franchise brands, watch inspiring talks, and get free expert advice. Book your free tickets today at franchisetickets.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:34 is the time. Simon Marks on standby. In fact, Simon Marks might be a contender for the thing that I'm about to mention to you. I'm doing a podcast tomorrow. I'm doing Tim Leohru's Guess Who's Coming to Dinner podcast. You know Tim from Classic FM. I need to come up with five people that I would invite to my fantasy dinner party. And I'm struggling, so I might ask for a little bit of help with that before 1 o'clock today. I've got Brian Clough, David Bowie, Jane Austen, J.D. Salinger, and I went for Joan of Arc because I didn't think there were enough women there. But I'm going off that a bit because I don't know anything about her, really, except that she wasn't married to Noah. Simon Marks is in Washington, D.C., and, I don't know, Simon, do I need to ask you a question? Shall I just put a penny in the slot and see what happened?
Well, I have to say, James, I woke up here, what, about an hour ago, and read that the Prime Minister thinks that a calm discussion with President Trump is the way out of the particular thicket in which we all now find ourselves, and that he wants to search for a, this is a quote, a solution rooted in partnership, facts, and mutual respect. Now, can we just break that down? I mean, partnership, Donald Trump demonstrably has absolutely no interest in. I mean, I think we can all agree that after 364 days of this, partnership is definitely not something he gives a fig about. Facts, well, I mean, I don't even need to deal with that. Obviously, this is not an administration in any way rooted in facts. In fact, they are so now rooted in what they used to call during the first term alternative facts that, as we see repeatedly at the White House briefing and saw as recently as last week, if you don't accept their alternative version of the facts, you are accused of being a radical left propagandist who shouldn't even be in the room pretending to be a journalist. That's how far that's gone. And mutual respect. I mean, where's the mutual respect
in a US-UK relationship that has seen a partial trade deal that has gone completely off the rails in the months since it was hailed by the Prime Minister as a breakthrough. A national security strategy that makes it, I cannot emphasize this enough, official government policy here in the United States to help Nigel Farage win the keys to number 10. A situation where five European citizens, two of them from Britain, were sanctioned within the last month by the United States government for trumped-up charges of restricting the freedom of speech of Americans and American companies. A situation in which Elon Musk, within the last few days, has accused the British Prime Minister of fascism. A situation in which Donald Trump is suing the BBC for $10 billion, a defamation lawsuit where in reality, in the real world, the BBC ought to be suing him for defamation, and a situation where for the last year, we've all basically been told we've got to suck it up, Ukraine's going to have to give away massive parts of its territory to the Russians, and just that's just the way the world is, because Donald Trump wants to get his hands on rare earths minerals on both sides of that Ukraine-Russia border. That's before we get to Venezuela and the purloining of Venezuelan oil that is taking place. So we're going to do this based on partnership, facts, and mutual respect.
And mature alliances.
Tell me how that's going to
work. And mature alliances, yeah. Simon. Mature alliances.
It's just laughable.
Could he have done anything else? I'm tempting you into analysis now, but you've written an excellent piece for the LBC website. You don't address this question, but I'm just bigging up your powers of analysis more generally. Could he have done it? Could he have done anything else?
Well, I think there's all sorts of things that could have been done. I mean, as I say on that website piece, I mean, have we called the US Ambassador Warren Stevens to the Foreign Office for a carpeting? I don't think so. Why have we not done that? Traditionally, we absolutely would do that when other governments engaged in this kind of brutish behaviour. Have we announced that we are now permanently and irrevocably going to close Britain's supermarket doors to American beef and chlorinated chicken and other inferior agricultural products that Donald Trump insists we need to accept as part of a trade agreement? Have we told them that the King and the Queen and the Prince of Wales and the Princess of Wales are not coming to America? We're cancelling the visits. The King and the Queen don't need to travel to the United States to celebrate America's 250th birthday after all of this. And the Prince and Princess of Wales similarly are not going to attend the FIFA World Cup and absolutely are not going to stick around for July the 4th. Have we told them that? Have we told them that we've put their majesties through enough of all of this with absolutely no return for the investment that's been made? And critically, I think, James, have we made any representations to them about whether the UK is now going to limit intelligence sharing, which leaves us legally in the frame for any of the erratic behaviour that Donald Trump commits on the world stage, at a time when in that extraordinary letter to the Norwegian Prime Minister, attacking him, you know, for not giving him the Nobel Peace Prize, even though, of course, the Norwegian Prime Minister and government has nothing to do with the Nobel Peace Prize. He says, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States of America. A man who within the last 10 days has said, I don't need international law, I will be guided by my own morality. Are we okay continuing to be part of the Five Eyes partnership and sharing intelligence with this US government so Donald Trump can then use that intelligence and be guided by his own morality in the decisions that he makes on the world stage? I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg, but it seems to me to say nothing about any of those issues will leave the American president waking up here in Washington, D.C. this morning, actually waking up in Mar-a-Lago this morning down in Florida, because it's a holiday here today. I think it will leave him once again sensing the unmistakable aroma of weakness emanating from number 10 Downing Street.
But not from Brussels, and Starmer was a signatory to the altogether more robust joint response yesterday. And now to the question I've asked you in various different contexts about 7 million times this year alone. As you say, tomorrow the first anniversary of this administration. Is any of this concerning or motivating Republicans in America, his facilitators, his supporters, his base?
Yeah, we definitely saw some moves over the weekend. I think it was really notable that Congressman Mike McCall, who is a Republican, very, very steeped in international affairs, one of the thinkers in the Republican Party about foreign affairs, appeared on ABC yesterday and said that he believed that the president needed to understand that were he to engage in military action to try and seize Greenland, that was tantamount to declaring war on NATO. He argued absolutely correctly, as the Danish government argues, that the 1951 treaty that was signed between the United States and Denmark allows President Trump to do whatever he wants to do in Greenland. And the Danes keep saying to him, you don't need to own it. You can come here and we can have a conversation. And that treaty allows you to build as many military bases on Greenland soil as you want.
Yes.
You know, we can talk about everything within the framework of that 1951 treaty. And Congressman McCall was basically saying, not just to the television audience, but I think to the Republican Make America Great Again faithful, this is crazy. He said, you know, to buy Greenland, it's got to be a willing seller, willing buyer arrangement. And there's absolutely no willing seller out there that he could identify. So why not just do what we know we can do, which is use that 1951 treaty to expand America's footprint in Greenland and stop all of the nonsense. But as you were saying at the beginning of the hour, the nonsense is all about territorial expansion, and it's all about when he spins that globe of the world, he sees that massive stars and stripes right on the top of it, and he looks at it, and he says, I did that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you've not been wrong about much, if indeed anything, lately, up to and including the concerns you were among the first to express about the likelihood of the midterms even going ahead, but we haven't got time to get into that now, because... Well, we've got to get into this. $1 billion to join Donald Trump's, what is it? Just a kind of UN light, a pound shop United Nations, or $1 billion shop United Nations.
Yeah, I think it's not a pound shop United Nations. I mean, it is evident from the reporting that was published over the weekend by Bloomberg that this Board of Peace, we all have to understand, is not simply about Gaza. When it was first mooted, this was going to be, you know, the governing administrative function that was going to oversee Gaza post-conflict. In Donald Trump's mind, and the minds of the people that are pushing this, particularly Jared Kushner, his own son-in-law and businessman, in Donald Trump's mind, this is the vehicle that is going to become the alternative for the United Nations Security Council. And so he's reaching out to all of these countries, asking them to come and join, pay $1 billion. He will be the chairman of this Board of Peace. He will uniquely decide who gets to sit round the table and who doesn't. He will be the chairman, by the way, in perpetuity, not when he, if he leaves office, not when he leaves office, he moves on and the next American president becomes the chairman of the Board of Peace.
Oh, boy.
This is his baby. He controls all the cash, and they evidently see this as a vehicle that is going to leech authority away from the United Nations Security Council and become an alternative to it. So to the extent that the Prime Minister did something right today, turning around and saying we're having nothing to do with this is absolutely the right move, because all of the reporting this weekend presented this almost in kind of like Dr. Evil terms in reference to what he plans to do with this vehicle. Huge questions in this for Sir Tony Blair, who I see over the weekend was referring questions about the Board of Peace to the White House. I mean, I think he's got to ask some serious questions himself about whether he actually really, truly wants to be part of this, given what appears to be worldwide eternal ambitions for an institution that Donald Trump personally intends to control.
Oh, boy. This might be one of your finest hours, actually. I wish they wouldn't keep giving us so much material. I really, really do. But Vladimir Putin, the Kremlin tells us, will be sitting on this panel if he wants to. I mean, at what point do we just throw our hands up in the air and give up attempts to make sense of it all and tie it all together? You clearly are... Well, I've been on for 3 hours. You've only just got up, so I'm allowed to be a bit more beleaguered than you are at this point in proceedings.
Well, let me just offer this thought. Tomorrow, for reasons that are absolutely incomprehensible to me, the Speaker of the House of Representatives is going to be addressing Parliament, Mike Johnson. He's in London.
Yeah.
And I know this is all part of our celebration of America's 250 years and, you know, hashtag greater together, which is the hashtag the British Embassy here is using to describe the eternal partnership, the special relationship that exists across the Atlantic. Mike Johnson is... second in line for the presidency after Vice President J.D. Vance. So he's an important guy. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, 10 days ago, only 10 days ago, was asked about reports that Marco Rubio had told a closed-door session of Republican lawmakers that Donald Trump was now much more interested in the idea of buying Greenland than in necessarily using gunboats to try and seize it by force. Mike Johnson was asked about that after he emerged from the meeting. Was it true that the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, had said America wanted to buy Greenland? And Johnson's response was, yeah, I heard him say something about that. He did say that the president was now thinking of, you know, trying to buy it. But it was all said with a smile on his face, and it all felt like it was a bit of a joke. That was where the man, second in line to the American presidency behind J.D. Vance, was 10 to 12 days ago. And now we've come all the way to the point where the entire transatlantic relationship is on the brink of collapse over his own president's behavior. So they should be asking him behind the scenes some really tough questions if they truly think that they can resolve all of this based on partnership, facts, and mutual respect.
And mature alliances. Final question. How much is the US hurting itself, potentially? I mean, you've given us most of the jigsaw pieces that we need here, but just pop them together for us, would you?
Well, I mean, you know, I consume a lot of British products here in the United States, as you would imagine, and I certainly went out shopping this weekend and stocked up ahead of price rises. I mean, I think if I was an American in the mood for a decent single malt from Scotland or a Land Rover, or if I was one of the millions of Americans who are now injecting themselves with Danish-made Ozempic, yes, 100% made in Denmark, and again, huge leverage there, by the way. You know, were I engaged in the use of Ozempic, I think I'd be pretty concerned. I think I'd be getting out there and stocking up as rapidly as possible. Because remember, despite what Donald Trump says, the tariffs get passed on to American consumers in the form of price rises. So all of those British cars, British-made cars that we export to the United States that were supposedly, you know, going to be at the heart of that partial trade deal last year, all of those are about to be jacked up by 10% on February the 1st, 25% on June the 1st. And so, yes, I mean, for Americans out there all over the country, whether they realize it or not, prices once again are going to come under pressure as a direct result of their own president's extraordinary actions.
Simon, thank you. And I mean it. I really do. I always mean it. But on days like this, I mean it even more than I do on days not like this. Although it feels like there aren't many days not like this these days. Come on, unwrap that.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Keir Starmer's Trump whispering skills are pushed to the limits over Greenland and tariffs. The Prime Minister says the President won't use military force. ICE surveillance and raids continue in a nervous Minneapolis.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
The following is from TfL.
My name was Luna, like the moon. I was 2 days short of my 17th birthday when I was killed. My killer wasn't a bad man. He'd had a rescue dog called Frank and rang his mum every Sunday. He wasn't a speed freak. He just thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit. But that was enough to knock me off my bike and kill me.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
With Little Plus, you can hit your January health goals with 20% off all grapes and up to 20% off selected gut health products, including your favourite brands like Actimel and Activia. Open the Little Plus app to start saving. Lidl, more to value. Limited offer while stocks last. Little Plus T's and C's apply. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 28th of the 1st. Calcium contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ADVICE to 78900 to find out more. That's ADVICE to 78900.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
It is 12:53 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC on a day of extraordinary moments and moment singular as well. But we have some time, thank goodness, to speak to one of my favourite people, indeed, Dame Carol Homden, who is the CEO of Corum, a charity, a children's charity that has its roots in the Foundling Hospital that many of you will know from the work of Jackie Wilson, and many of you may have visited the museum in Fitzrovia. But Carol is here to remind us about the importance of adoption, and crucially today, Carol, or should that be Dame Carol, you're calling upon the government to make sure that adopted children and their families are given the support that they need. A parliamentary event taking place to mark the centenary of the Adoption of Children Act. Briefly, because we are short of time, what happened before that act came in to people like me?
It was the Wild West. So there was no real legal platform for children's welfare and rights. And so there may have been successful informal arrangements, but equally children were exposed to risk. And so 1926, after much debate, Parliament actually introduced the first legal process for the rights and responsibilities for a child to be able to be transferred, and so to provide them the stability and permanence they need for life.
Wow. We've come a long way, but not clearly far enough. 45% increase in the number of children waiting to be adopted in England over just the past 3 years. 3,000 waiting to be matched with an adoptive family. Some, in fact, roughly half of that waiting 18 months or more. And the number of adoptive families is decreasing. Do we know that why the second bit is true?
Well, there's a multiplicity of reasons, of course, individual and systemic. But we are looking at demographic changes, so perhaps fewer people in the traditional age range for becoming parents, and then being in a squeezed middle with childcare costs and also pressures of support with older members of their family, housing costs, cost of living crisis. But within all this, there are things we can do to help, to convey the fact that there are children waiting who need their love and support, that agencies like Corum actually will stand by those adoptive families, and to call on government to restore the adoption register and to make sure that those families can depend upon timely and consistent access to the services they need.
It changes your job according to who's in Downing Street. I mean, I don't want to tempt you into indiscretions, and you wouldn't follow me anyway if I tried to, but should we be pleased with how Keir Starmer's government is addressing these issues so far, or is there plenty of room for improvement?
I think we should be pleased that successive governments have actually recognised the key responsibilities that any government has to children who depend upon the support of the state. Mm. But I would point out that it is important to learn from the evidence of what works and not to make the developments of those services subject to political vagary or terms. And so I think that the minister is very concerned, and rightly so, that we have sufficiency across all placement types, not only adoption, but fostering and kinship care. And we would absolutely support that. But unless we can place our very most vulnerable children, who the court has decided to need adoption, unless we can do that, we are letting down the most vulnerable in society.
And that has to be state backed, doesn't it? We can't leave it to organisations, charities like yours, agencies like yours, because this has to be something that is baked into the structure of society, really. The support that these families need is measurably and massively different from almost any other family imaginable.
Yes, that's absolutely right. We need to remember that today, unlike perhaps earlier generations, adoption is a service for children who have been removed into the care of the state for their own protection. They have had the toughest start in life. This is not like the 1920s and 30s, 40s, 50s and 60s, when unmarried women felt pressured to give up their babies, but probably would have been able to care for them very successfully if they'd had welfare support. This now is a collective duty to our most vulnerable children, and we need all parts of our system, schools, mental health services, other medical and social support structures, to stand with them in addition to the work that is given, which is specific to adoption support.
Words are funny, aren't they, Carol? Because I hear that phrase a lot, that the most vulnerable, but literally these children are the most vulnerable in our population, in our society.
People, I think if you imagine, for example, being removed into care and being drug addicted at that point, having had experiences in utero that may lead you to have fetal alcohol syndrome, for example, those bring really into mind for any parent listening or any carer listening what those consequences might be. But I mustn't end without saying that the vast majority of children who are adopted go on to live and thrive in their families, that the breakdown rate of adoption is extraordinarily low in comparison with other cases, and that in the main, despite all the challenges that can occur for individual families, which I absolutely respect, adopted children bring joy to the families that adopt them.
Indeed they do. I've got a couple, as you know, a couple of godsons to prove it. Carol, thank you. People want to find out more about this. Is there somewhere that we should be sending them? I know that the centenary of the Adoption Act is being marked at adoptionstory.org.uk, but if people want to find out more about the work that Coram does, where should they go?
To coram.org.uk, and it could be you that changes a child's life today.
It really could. Thank you, Carol. Dame Carol Omden. 12:59 is the time. A lot of people suggesting Stuart Lee should have made my fantasy dinner party list. So I'm delighted to tell you Stuart's joining us on Wednesday on air. So there you go. I don't need to invite him to my fantasy dinner party. Joan of Arc, your place is safe for the time being. That's it for now. You can listen back on our free global player or the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, including James O'Brien Daily, the best bits from my LBC show every day. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Who else is on your list?
Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah.
J.D. Salinger.
Yes.
Brian Clough.
Best opening to a book ever.
Yes. Brian Clough.
No, not for me.
And David Bowie.
That's good. I'd replace Brian Clough with Shankly. And then,
yeah, all right. Well,
Audrey Hepburn.
You're bringing footballification
into
everything. I don't know about Joan of Arc. Joan of Arc's the weak link at the moment.
Oh, I think she'd be fascinating.
Well, that's what I thought as well. And then people pointed out that she might have been a bit kind of eccentric.
So what?
Exactly. And also, how better to find out more about her than
sit down with her
and get Brian Clough to interview her?
Exactly. I love it. It's a game you can play forever, well, that
Tim,
game, isn't
Tim,
it?
It's Tim from Classic FM's podcast I'm doing tomorrow.
It's wonderful,
it is,
yeah,
a lovely one. Yeah. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Another great film as well. Mm-hmm. We could talk about that, but we're not going to. At three today, as Prince Harry hits the courts again, Princess Eugenie, his first cousin, goes no contact with her father, Andrew. We'll talk more about that at three. But that press conference this morning from the Prime Minister has given us food for thought, hasn't it? Keir Starmer seemed confident that Donald Trump won't use military force to try to take Greenland. This is the same Donald Trump who already has against Venezuela and has 1,500 US military personnel on standby in Alaska to go to Minneapolis at a moment's notice if required. A very cold Louis Goodall has been in Minneapolis over the weekend. He's going to join us live from there at 3:30. We'll talk more about all of that. But we begin with Keir Starmer's speech this morning.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has ruled out retaliatory tariffs in the face of threats from Donald Trump over his plans to control Greenland. The US president has warned he could bring in measures against countries who don't support the takeover. Speaking in Downing Street earlier, the Prime Minister said the move is completely wrong. He has reiterated his belief that the future of the semi-autonomous Danish territory is for the people who live there to decide.
Denmark is a close ally of the United Kingdom and of the United States, a proud NATO member that has stood shoulder to shoulder with us, including at real human cost in recent decades. Alliances endure because they're built on respect and partnership, not pressure.
Sir Keir refused to answer questions on whether the King's state visit to the US later this year should be cancelled. Spanish authorities say human error is practically ruled out after 39 people were killed in a high-speed train collision. More than 100 others were also injured when a Malaga to Madrid service derailed and then hit another in Andalusia last night. The Kremlin is claiming President Putin has been invited to join a US-led peace council for Gaza. The US has not yet confirmed the claim. Prince Harry has arrived at the High Court in London for the start of his case against the Daily Mail's publishers. He's among high-profile figures who have accused Associated Newspapers of unlawfully gathering information. Media lawyer Ian Bloom says the firm denies the allegations and will try to have the case thrown out.
As the paper's lawyers will argue, Harry and the other claimants have delayed bringing their claims to such an extent that the statute of limitations should be called on and the claims disbarred. The events that they complain about took place between 1993 and 2011, and that's why they say they brought the claims too late.
And an international trial is examining whether a finger prick blood test could detect Alzheimer's disease before symptoms appear. The study involves 1,000 volunteers in the UK, US and Canada. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 48 points at 10,186. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for many with a few patches of rain in places, especially in Northern Ireland. Drier and brighter to the southeast, central and west Scotland, west Wales and southwest England. A high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Australia is on sale now with Qantas, the spirit of Australia. Swap grey skies for blue and experience the magic of Australia in the sky from the moment you step on board. With a warm Aussie welcome and premium produce, you'll feel like you're already there. Book now at Qantas.com or speak to your travel agent. Hurry, sale ends Jan 20. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. America will be waking up around now, or maybe a couple of hours ago. So we'll see what more comes from Donald Trump later on this afternoon. But our own leader, our Prime Minister Keir Starmer, held that press conference this morning. You'll have heard it on Nick's show and discuss more afterwards on James's, saying that Donald Trump's plan to impose tariffs on the UK and other countries that oppose his plan to take over Greenland is completely wrong. He also said he does not think for a second that Donald Trump intends to take military action over Greenland. Something tells me that might elicit a response from the president himself. Let's get more on this from Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, who was at that press conference. Talk us through it.
Yeah, Sheila, I mean, it's a really extraordinary threat, isn't it? From one of our closest allies to essentially economically punish us because of a political position which everybody in the Western world agrees is the case that, you know, it's up to Denmark and Greenland to decide their own future and their own security. And it's not up to Donald Trump to essentially rip up decades of historical precedent and take over Greenland, whether that's in some form of deal, whether he wants to buy it, or indeed, as some people have suggested, potential military action. And Keir Starmer, as you'd expect, is taking this threat incredibly seriously. He has been speaking at an emergency press conference this morning. He ripped up his own plans for a cost of living speech, which he was due to deliver this morning. He instead addressed the nation at number 10 Downing Street. He said that there would not be a trade war, essentially that he wouldn't be slapping any tariffs back on the USA if they did come for us. He says he's trying to talk to Donald Trump and other EU nations about what to do and basically trying to get him to climb down. But this was what his response was earlier on today at that press conference. The PM was asked if we should take the president's threats of military action seriously.
Do you think Donald Trump is genuinely considering military action?
Look, I don't, actually. I think that this can be resolved and should be resolved through calm discussion, but with the application of the principles and values that I've set out in terms of who decides the future of Greenland, and making clear that the use of tariffs in this way is completely wrong.
That was quite a bold statement for a man who tries not to be very bold.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, considering we hear from him, you know, day in, day out, where he's so careful not to criticise Donald Trump, he's basically saying, I don't really believe that Donald Trump would potentially do military action in this way. And to be fair, Donald Trump has said that his preferred option is basically to buy Greenland, isn't it? It's not the first sort of option on his list. He's obviously looking at loads of things. But, you know, other people in his administration have been much more forthright in saying, well, you know, there's no military in Greenland that can basically defend it if indeed we were to take it and we were to decide to go and do something. So quite a strong reaction, I think, from Keir Starmer, basically saying that Donald Trump's bark might be worse than his bite. So he basically doesn't believe him, that he's actually going to send troops into Greenland.
Although that latest Truth Social post from Donald Trump to, I think it was the Norwegian Prime Minister over the weekend.
Extraordinary.
It did say, I no longer feel an obligation, because you didn't give me the Nobel Peace Prize for having stopped 8 wars plus, he says, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace, although it will always be predominant, but can now think about what is good and proper for the United States. And he essentially goes, you only, Denmark only have it because some bloke landed on a boat. Which was kind of true of America as well.
Right.
A few blokes landed on a boat.
Exactly. This is a letter that the president has written to the president
of Norway
on this matter. Just extraordinary, really. Yeah, considering your country decided not to give me the Nobel Peace Prize, I no longer feel an obligation to think purely of peace.
Yeah.
Why do they have a right of ownership anyway? There are no written documents. It's only that a boat landed there hundreds of years ago. We also